Welcome everybody. I want to welcome in particular, we have the team, Tandi. We have the team here from the pensioners in Msunduzi. They are my home girls, as it were. So we want to welcome them in particular. And the representatives from that organization. But we have a practical matter to attend to very quickly, and it's required in terms of the processing of bills. Given that Parliament's about to rise on the 20th of March, in our case, 28th of March in the case of the NCOP, there have been endless debates about what bills are doable and what are not. So we were asked to deal with this matter. I have had a fleeting exchange this morning with Alf Lees, and he will speak for himself, but if he is not disrupted by Tandi, he will speak for himself. Okay. He will speak for himself, but the sense I have is that he's amenable, let's put it that way. The proposal is, after consultations from our side and the NCOP powers that be, it would not be possible to process the Financial Matters Amendment Bill fully in time for the NCOP to rise on the 28th. You will recall there are five issues there. And the most challenging seems to be around the search and seizure provisions in the auditor's case, in the IRB requirements for greater powers over errant auditors. So that obviously requires a lot of processing. It raises, some people say, constitutional issues, and for the NCOP to rush that would be inappropriate. We have had endless engagements also with Comrade Charles de Beer. So through the engagements that have occurred over the last 10 days and more, of course it's for the NCOP to finally decide. But from the NA side, the proposal is that we have already a private member's bill on state-owned banks, from Mr. Floyd Chivambu of the EFF. And he has every right to say, Parliament's about to end, and I'd like the bill to be voted on. According to my understanding, Frank, the committee can still decide that it's not going to vote on the bill by majority vote, but do we want to do that? It's not fair, it seems to me. Secondly, it overlaps considerably with one aspect of the Financial Matters Amendment Bill, which is the Treasury's perspective on state-owned banks. The differences are, as I understand it so far, is the Treasury's bill provides more limited conditions under which a state bank can be created. The Freedom Front bill, understandably, allows for more latitude. That's the difference, and there might be one or two other differences in it. So what we are saying is that the one issue we all agree on is just providing for divorce settlements in the military to be treated the same, whether it's a male or a female person who's getting divorced, who's a member of the SANDF. Now, that's a straightforward matter. It's consistent with our requirements. So I don't think that's a policy issue. We can, that's nothing to be discussed. Nobody raised it in the public hearings, as I recall. So that matter, which is not a policy matter, it's being, like, filling in the gap to be consistent with our requirements on constitutional equality. The second matter is the state-owned bank, and that matter we've discussed many, many times with Mr. Chivambu's bill, and quite frankly, the same issues for the most part apply to the provisions in the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. So we are proposing that instead of proceeding with the whole bill, we only look at these two issues, the military pensions matter and gender, and the state-owned bank. And we forego the rest, and it can be revived after we leave and the new parliament reconvened. So there it is. We just need then, if that's our view, and if the majority of us agree, the chair has to write to all the people to say that when you come next Tuesday to hear what National Treasury has to say, you actually will only come if you have an interest in the state bank issue or the pensions issue. Linda, can you conduct your interviews outside this meeting? Linda, can you conduct your interview outside the meeting, please? So, no, you know, because I just want everybody to sort of like, Linda, in the years you've known me, have I been rude to you? Or have I protected you? You even asked a question to a member twice. Now, but this time it's a bit like, I'm trying to get some sort of agreement. So there we are, colleagues. That's where we are. We're saying this is what we want to do. We need to write to people. Now, Alf rightly said to me, which I thought about, you know, Bernard's going to get very upset. And that's exactly what happened. I spoke to Bernard now. I'll tell you what Bernard says. I think it's important to record it. Bernard's attitude is, I'm distraught. This is what Bernard said. I'm distraught. We've been waiting on this bill. You know, I don't have the powers. He means Irva. Doesn't have the powers to act against auditors. Now you're saying it'll come more probably in August or September. That's too late. We've been waiting on this. And so on and so on. So, you know, I told him, look, this is the way we're likely to go. It'll be put to the vote. I have spoken to the DA. They're opposed to the state-owned banks thing, obviously, which is their right. But it seems they're amenable that we, in any case, we can vote on it. But, you know, even if it's a grudging amenability, we'd like to confer with the other parties in the NA side. So there we are. There's no guarantee that the NCOP will do it. We have to do our side and now formally write to them. So it's the NA SCOF members. Do you want to comment? NA side. Sorry, yes, Mr. Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I anticipated that Bernard wouldn't be happy, as we said. But nevertheless, the views that the controversies surrounding the profession over the past couple of years, I'm sure, make the risk of further such incidents occurring before August or September somewhat remote. And I think that perhaps Bernard should just be patient, and we can deal thoroughly with the issue of search and seizure, which I think is an issue that we really do need to apply our minds to very, very carefully. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Other than that, I think it's fine.
Tandy?
Chair, I don't think we've got substantive reasons why we should not proceed with such an important legislation that gives effect to the audit authority to have teeth that they've been asking us for more than 3 years to have. And given the recent events on, and well, I personally felt vindicated because I said that the relationship between audit firms and institutions they are auditing has become very cozy to a point that we needed to have regulations in place that will ensure that as they do their work, they don't find themselves wanting, and they've been found wanting. KPMG is a typical example of that. The sign-off issues, so many issues. Hogan Lovell, I can quote so many of them who have been found wanting and delaying the implementation. And you see, there's a misconception about what search and seizure means in this context, even when we have set precedents with a previous legislation based on the rule of the Constitutional Court about the powers of FIC, for instance, in relation to search and seizure, which is supposed to be taking place within the prescripts of the law. We even said in this committee, we're not going to have tirades as and when they wish they wake people in the wee hours of the morning to search their private properties like they used to do it during the apartheid
state. That is a procedural matter. We are entering the discussion. All I can tell you is I have no mandate, nor does anybody here. What the chief whip and the chief whip on the other side, well, I can't speak. Let me put it this way. This is what Charles and I have been discussing for 10 days. He's discussing with the powers that be. Perhaps we should have a study group, but at this stage, there's only one possibility, and no other, unfortunately, that the only basis on which we can proceed with the Financial Matters Amendment Bill and the final call made is if we only look at the one issue. I agree with you. I'm just conveying to you, that's why I conveyed to you. Bernard said he's distraught, he's feeling disempowered, he's very saddened, and there is also the subtext. I think what's emerging is a feeling that our committee is familiar with these issues, right? And as you know, when the turnover comes in 2 months' time, there'll be new members here, won't be familiar with it. So I've pleaded with him to understand that some of the people here will certainly be back. And even if they're not in this committee, the chief whip is committed to it. So Tandy, I agree with you. We all agree with you. It's a public hearing. The main task was to go by the negotiations for 10 days now. It's only allows. If we're going to insist on doing that, as important as I agree you saying it is, and nobody disagrees, then we can't go ahead with anything. We can only go ahead with this is what has been struck. So I'm pleading with members to agree that we mandated. I don't know why Peggy's smiling. If others want to go and negotiate with all of them after 10 days, can you confirm that this, when we start 10 days ago? Can you confirm? Can you just put it on record?
Yes, co-chair, we started 10 days ago and interacted on the NCOP side with the NCOP leadership. And working backwards from the 28th of March, what is possible and what is not possible. The difference is the NCOP, the Select Committee for Finance, and the Select Committee for Appropriation is the same members. It's not two different separate committees with separate members. So we're dealing with the whole national budget process as well, within a specific time frame, consulting 9 provinces. And this is now loaded onto us. So we're trying to maneuver and create space to deal what is to be done. Okay. And we are honored that our chief whip in the NCOP on Mumuai is also here this morning. We were in consultation till late last night. Thank you.
Can I suggest there's no... Can I just set the... You know, there's it's simple. In a nutshell, there's no debate, right? Yesterday morning, we were in a strategy meeting where our chief whip also spoke to a certain senior member and also appealed that we look at the state-owned bank. So what I'm saying to you is beyond us. We can't say, let's now put the... It's not possible. It's not an instruction. The rules of parliament don't allow it. Every court case that has been taken by NGOs or opposition parties, I think, to conclusion, has concluded that the NCOP has not done proper consultation. So, colleagues, the other option is you can write to the speakers and the chair and ask that Parliament be extended by how many weeks? About 2 to 3 weeks more. That's your choice. So can we please vote on this matter? What are we going to do? Peggy?
I think we have no problem after you have presented your views. I think we are in support of what you are saying. We have no time. Yeah, I'm moving.
They're seconder. So now you mandated me to write to the stakeholders to say only those who have an interest in the state-owned bank and the military pension issue and gender must come next week, and we'll continue with the bill. Okay, thank you very much. Having said that, before we move on, I want to apologize to the public who's here for the public hearings. We don't normally do this. It's unusual, as you know, for those of you coming to this committee. There's one other item I have to deal with, very important. It's a great honor, I think. Well, not I think, I know. To have present here in the gallery, Klaas de Jonge. For those of you who are not knowing him, he is a former Umkhonto we Sizwe Special Ops member. You might recall that he was imprisoned and escaped. It's a remarkable escape with leg irons into the Dutch embassy. He misled the police that they were the targets is in a Nedbank building in Swane, Pretoria. And how stupid are the police of those days, right? I mean, Peggy, just think about it, right? So, Peggy, just think about it. He drags them there. He's got leg irons, and then he directs them to a target on the right, and then he shuffles into the embassy. But they pounced on him, right? And remember when Helene Pastoors was here, that's his former partner, I told you there was a huge international outcry because the police hauled him out. So Pik Botha said, well, he was only half in his body across the door. So if his legs were not across, he doesn't qualify for diplomatic immunity. So they took him back to prison. Then the Dutch embassy and all the embassies wrote to Pik Botha and said, you're breaking international protocol. There's no such thing that if your head and waist are beyond the line, then you don't qualify. So they took him back to the embassy. He stayed there for 2 years and more. Finally, in an elaborate exchange between Wynand Jutoy of the South African Defense Force, who was caught in Angola where he wasn't supposed to be, some Namibians who, Angolans who were arrested by the Namibians, Albertini, a French national, who was ANC underground in the Siskai area, and the Dutch government. They negotiated a prisoner release. So he came out and he was received, obviously, with a rousing reception at Amsterdam Airport, and he has remained, after that, committed to the anti-apartheid struggle. He remains an activist at age 82. He's here with his biographer. And yes, so I'm going to call upon Klaus de Jonge just to stand up and say hello to us.
Hello.
Thank you. Then we also have his biography here, JJ. Just once again to repeat, it always strikes me on occasions like this, that like the Spanish Civil War, our struggle drew people from the world over. These people gave up the comforts of a middle-class life in Holland, and in Aileen's case, Belgium, and they came to fight our struggle and their struggle. As he said to me in an interview, he took part in the struggle, not because of any other reason, but he personally felt affronted by racism. It was his struggle as much as all of us. So anyway, welcome, Klaus, over to the first input.
Kosatu,
thank you.
Thank you very much, James.
Do you want to say something quickly? Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Jay. Good morning, comrades and members of the Standing and Select Committee, and thank you for the opportunity to make a presentation to you on the budget. I think the point that's made at the opening by the chairperson and welcoming Comrade Klaus here is the point that the budget is not a technical exercise only. It's the one way in which we as a society, as a government, as a people can make sure that we realize the election promises and the liberation promises we made in the Freedom Charter. So the budget is a key bridge between what we promise and what we do, and we think for that we must appreciate that it's just not cold figures without a soul, but it goes to what we want to do as a society and as a country. We've long ago, as Kosatu, raised our concerns about the state of economic development in the country, the governance issues, as well as the budgetary crisis. We've exemplified that point by the state of the nation, by the president that talks about the triple challenges of poverty, inequality, and unemployment. And we think that the numbers are all heading in the wrong direction, and that has to be dealt with as a matter of urgency. We expect from this government a clear stimulus package that deals with the question of jobs, investment, and ensures that the summits that we've just gone through, that those undertakings that were made there by the whole of the society, that those are given effect to. We also want to see a clear economic turnaround, just not tinkering with some of the fringes of what's happening in the economy, but a radical change in the way we're doing things. And then, of course, there's the question about state-owned enterprises and how we're going to be dealing with them and the implications of their turnaround. Now, corruption for us is one of the main issues. The medium-term budget statement acknowledges that corruption takes a huge amount of money out of the fiscus, up to 10%. And this clearly reduces the amount of money that we have available to deal with many of the challenges that we exist. But we had hoped to see in this budget that government was much more decisively going to deal with the issues of corruption. How do we respond to the issues of corruption? How do we make sure that those who had essentially stolen money from the poor and the poor's most desperate needs, that they are both arrested, convicted, and made sure that they go to jail? We think that the commissions are being set up is a bit soft, and it's taking a whole lot of money, and it's not necessarily elevating the crime of corruption to the abhorrent practice that it should have in the society. Along with the challenges of corruption, we think that there should be a comprehensive forensic audit done of all areas of government, state, national, local, and at provincial level, and all of the state-owned enterprises. We think there should be lifestyle audits of all elected leaders, of the management and supply chain management, because clearly there's a huge appetite for conspicuous consumption and the lifestyles that continue to remove our leaders further and further away from the people who so desperately look for their services. Then we feel that we've got to find a way to extend the role of supply chain managers, of chief procurement officers, and that they play a central role in the treasury and in state-owned enterprises to make sure that many of those practices are stopped. On the area of expenditure, the debt levels are clearly out of control, and government must urgently do something about that, because once we're exceeding the 60% debt to GDP ratio, we're going to be subject to IMF pressures and we'll have worse structural adjustment programs imposed on our country. And to do that, we've got to decisively deal with the areas of wasteful expenditure. Here, the most obvious are what's happening at Madupi in Kosili and the Giani water project, and then also what's happening in the trains and many of the other areas of infrastructure spend that we've seen across the country. COSATU wants to play a meaningful role in making sure that we deal with these questions together. And so we put forward a few proposals that we hope go some way to making sure that we can shift the money from the areas that are clearly less needed to the more urgent areas of social injury of our people. So we think that the bloated executive must urgently be reduced. The perks that our members of parliament get must be reviewed. The spousal benefits, first class travel and travel allowances are all matters that must be taken into under review. And then the questions about the huge amounts of money that still in this budget is allocated to catering and extravagant expenses on buildings, including the new embassy in the USA. We are in a crisis. It can't be a question of spending as normal and just continuing with the commitments that were made before. Until we appreciate that the crisis means that we have to make radical changes in how we've done things, we're not going to be able to reduce the wastage within the budget. On the public service wage bill, we hold the view that the wage bill of 35% is stable, and it's in line with the international norms of the public service wage bills. We think the headcount at the moment is falling around 1% per annum, and taking into account the growth in the number of people in our society and the greater needs, the effect of reducing the number of staff in the public service is going to have a huge impact on service delivery and our ability to respond to our people's social injury. So while we see staff being cut, we see management positions being increased. We think that there should also be urgent steps to deal with slashing the cabinet, deal with mayoral committees and their perks, as well as the executive structures of provincial government. And then we must look at what's happening at state-owned enterprises and build a bridge between the conditions of employment in state-owned enterprises and those in the public services bargaining council, so that there is a clear labor market parity between those different areas of government. It is completely unacceptable, given the huge levels of salaries that some of the CEOs of state-owned enterprises earn, and they, in the main, have been the architects of the corrupt and huge structural problems that's come about in many of those areas of government. And then we want to see measures put in place to ensure that we freeze management posts and that we to reduce the wage gap. We've always spoken about the apartheid wage gap and our commitment to reduce that. We think these are amongst the steps that we should now be fast-tracking. In respect of the job summits and the investment summits that were held, we think that the focus on foreign direct investment is an important one, because we don't have sufficient savings inside our country. But there's such a demand for foreign direct investment across the globe, and we've seen that that has not brought about the kind of assistance that we require. So we've got to make sure that we deal with our own measures to reindustrialize our society and respond to many of the challenges that exist in the state-owned enterprises and in the public service. And for that, we need to put additional resources aside to make sure we deal with the questions and the agreements that have arisen in the summits that were held. We think there's an urgent need to look at the redeployment of many personnel. For example, in the area of policing, too many of the staffing are sitting in the head offices and not out in the fields where addressing the challenges of our people. This includes the huge amount of VIP protection staff that we have at the moment, and it's urgent time to remove them and redeploy them into the service of our people. The point that we want to stress here today most urgently, along with all of the other points that are being made, is the matter in relation to the Public Investment Corporation. We welcome the passing of the Public Investment Corporation at the National Assembly yesterday, but we want to say very clearly that we're concerned that there are huge political interest groups in the country that are trying to sabotage and stop the passing of this legislation. We can't have a fund of $2 trillion that in the main is made up of worker savings be left to the discretion of just a few political leaders. We want accountable structures, and we want to make sure that we can stop the looting that's taken place there in the past, and that clearly there's an agenda to continue doing. We will not accept the non-passing of the Public
investment corporation legislation that's going to the NCOP, and we will not allow to be sabotaged by vested interests who may have been part of looting in the past. This is an urgent matter for Kusatu, and if this matter is not addressed, we're going to see the relations that exist between ourselves, government, the state, and our political party that we're in alliance with severely strained. So we can't urge strongly enough that this matter is taken with the urgency that we attach to it and that it's passed before the closing of the session. On the state-owned enterprises, we would ask that there be an engagement on labor, both on the plans for how we're going to reposition these state-owned enterprises and the impact that it has on retrenchments or job cuts. We must make sure that there are clear turnaround plans and that the business models that are dealt with respond to the crisis in all of these state-owned enterprises. We need, again, comprehensive forensic audits in all of the areas, and with Eskom in particular, we need to make sure that the debt plans are finalized and that Eskom, as one of the biggest institutions in the country, doesn't increase the risk to our entire financial situation in the country and the development of our country, given the collapse of electricity. And then we previously made the point about PRASA and the urgent need to address that area as a matter of urgency. On revenue improvements, we've spoken about the fact that we've got to spend our money more carefully, we've got to stop the theft of our money, we've got to jail the looters and the thieves. But we've got to make sure that the SARS clean-out continues, that we make sure that the capacity that was in SARS, that was dismantled so that theft and looting could take place unencumbered, that those are reversed, and that the institutional capacity of SARS responds to many of the challenges that exist. And here we want to see greater interventions in what's happening at customs. This is in respect of a whole range of illegal inflows into the country, but more particularly around clothing and then the flooding of tobacco imports into the country, but dealing with all of those questions that have a bearing on us. On taxation generally, we feel that there was certainly enough space for us to increase the tax on corporations, but we didn't take that opportunity. We could have increased the taxes on many of the expensive fancy imports that just goes for lifestyle changes, but we didn't take that opportunity. We here had an opportunity in the midst of this crisis to deal with increasing the tax on individuals who have an income of more than R1 million a year, but again we never took this opportunity. Instead what we did was to make sure that we moved the tax burden onto working class and poor people. And this is manifested by the VAT increase. And so even though we appreciate some of the exemptions to VAT, it doesn't go nearly far enough to deal with the challenges that we have. The questions of bracket creep has had a huge impact on workers and effectively means that whatever increases they were able to secure this year through bargaining has been taken away through bracket creep.
Tony, you're at 11 minutes, please. Can you round up? Yeah.
Can I round up? I'll do that now, Chair. Thank you very much. And then finally, on the additional areas of VAT relief, we'd ask that the consideration be given to making sure more basic services available, and this is in relation to water and free electricity for the indigent communities. We want to ensure that there's a clear plan that deals with jobs. We want to make sure that the green economy is taken forward. And then on questions like the specific taxes that we've spoken about, the sugar tax and the others, we want to make sure that there's a just transition. And then finally, Chair, in the whole range of public services, we can see that our public services are not adequate to meeting the social injury that there is. So whether it's in health, education, public transport, or safety and security, there's not enough relief to our people, and in the budget this time around we don't see enough funding to address those problems. We support our government and we support the budget, and we hope that the passing of this budget will make sure that we deal with the essential problems that we have and that we're able to respond to the challenges that our people have. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Exactly 12 minutes and 2 seconds, a very good start. Budget Justice Coalition, you've got 12 minutes. Thanks. Of course, that's Tony Ehrenreich. He's the Western Cape for Life Provincial Secretary of COSATU.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Daniel McLaren. I'll be speaking from Section 27 on behalf of the Budget Justice Coalition. I have with me my colleague Owen Mallory. If we can go to the second slide, from the Alternative Information and Development Centre. I have to give apologies for our colleague Bursi Sebeko from the Institute for Economic Justice who will join us for the discussion, but unfortunately we'll miss the presentation. We can take the second slide. Thank you. The Budget Justice Coalition consists of around 15 organizations from across the the country, represented in several provinces, so we're going to be speaking on behalf of them today, working in sectors such as social development, education, healthcare, and others. Next slide. Our submission can be summed up in three parts, and I would also like to note that the submission takes inspiration on and wants to raise awareness amongst the committee of a submission which was made to the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights and the report of that committee, whose findings are congruent with a lot of the findings that we also make, and we also draw reference to those recommendations which are binding on the state in our submission. So the three arguments that we make is that looking back over the past 5 years, and not just at this budget, because we are at the end of our parliamentary term now, that austerity has been the essence of our fiscal policy for at least the last 5 years, but more likely since 2012-13. We show that by using data on the fiscal framework. We show that this has had regressive and discriminatory impacts, and it's also been counterproductive in terms of its impacts on the economy and on jobs. And then we show that there are alternative ways of raising revenue and managing debt that haven't yet been explored. Next slide, please. So we can see that the austerity policy through several indicators in the fiscal framework, the ones I want to draw your attention to now are just the fact that in four of the past 5 years, non-interest expenditure has not increased at the same level as revenue growth. This shows that as increasing available resources, increasing resources are available, they've been allocated to pay for debt service costs rather than for non-interest expenditure. And this is the essence of an austerity policy. We can also see in the non-interest expenditure growth, and this is the real annual growth, that has been cut in 2016-17 and reduced on a per capita basis the following year. We can also see that per capita non-interest expenditure growth is only at really 0.2% over this period. So in real terms, non-interest expenditure has not grown over the past 5 years. In two of the past 5 years, it has been actively cut. The next slide, please. Cutting non-interest expenditure when the economy is struggling is pro-cyclical and has had many negative effects. We've seen per capita GDP has fallen now for 4 years in a row. Public debt has continued to grow because of the shrinking economy. These have negative effects on inequality as well as on joblessness, and we now have one-third of our expanded labor force out of work. Next slide, please. We look at some of the impacts of austerity over the last 5 years in different areas, four that I'm going to highlight to you. The first is on the capacity of the state. We've seen a declining performance of many government departments, a rise in accruals, headcount cuts, and we think this, we actually produce evidence to show that this is affecting capacity at the very same time when we really need all hands on deck to deal with our various socioeconomic challenges. In terms of tax policy, we've seen regressive changes in the VAT rate, and yet, as Owen will show, other financing options on the wealthy have not been sufficiently explored. Next slide. We also look at health and education. These are the two sectors that Section 27 works on. In health, we have a real per capita decline in spending in this financial year. 700 million rand less will be spent than was announced in the MTBPS only a few months ago. We have continuing critical staff shortages, and although money is being taken out of the NHI fund to pay for filling these post vacancies, no timeline has yet been provided about when these posts will be filled. And we also have another obvious impact of austerity being a counterproductive policy as medico-legal claims have risen inexorably over the last 5 years and now make up more than half of the budgets of some provincial health departments. In education, Treasury admits that there has been a plateauing of spending per learner, but if you actually dig into the numbers a little bit more and compare the real inflation rates in the education sector, you'll see that real per learner spending has in fact declined by 10% per learner since 2010. We provide the citations to the research on which this is based in the submission. And of course, cuts to education also impact disproportionately on historically disadvantaged schools. Next slide, please. Okay, over to Owen.
Good morning. So regarding the tax mix, We believe that as a coalition that South Africa has failed in the past 5 years in making our tax mix more progressive. And this to us was seen last year particularly strongly with the decision to increase the VAT from 14 to 15% and last year and this year by increasing the fuel levy and fuel on taxes that hit the poorest South Africans the most. What we're saying is that instead there is a range of choices we could explore and we should explore in order to make our tax mix and our tax revenue more progressive in the collection. The first one is obviously to re-increase the personal income tax. We are far away from the 1997 rates because when you compare the tax paid by someone earning like over a million rand today with what he was paying back in time, if you take into account inflation, he's paying much less. Why? Simply because the tax bracket on personal income tax have increased much quicker than inflation, and that means that the de facto rate of high income earners has decreased. So we welcome the fact that the tax bracket have been almost freeze this year, but we believe this personal income tax could raise much more taxes if high income earners were contributing the fair share. So I think that's a major decision we have to take, is to make the high income earner pay the fair share to come back to the 1997 rate of personal income tax. Second thing is obviously the corporate income tax. It was 50% in 1994 and 35% not so far ago. It's only 28% today, and we are wondering why we are not using this tax base more efficiently, because currently the poor South African are hit the most by the regressive tax decisions that have been made regarding the VAT and the fuel levy. Another option we would like the committee to inquire into is the establishment of a net wealth tax. We do currently have some sort of wealth taxes in South Africa, but they don't tax comprehensively all sort of wealth one individual can own. What we're saying, and we're following on that, the report of the Davis Tax Committee that was released last year in March, that said that this is a sustainable tax base, and not only that, but it can also help South Africa address historical inequalities. And we think in the current context it would be a huge missed opportunity not to kill two birds with one stone and raise over, like, we believe, like, over 40 billion rand could be raised every year if a net wealth tax was implemented at a rate of 2% for net wealth over 1 million rand per individual. So that's a substantial amount of money we can raise. Obviously, this implementation will take a little bit of time because we first need to classify and see who owns what in South Africa. But in the meantime, we ask the committee to look at increasing, and you will see the detail in the submission, the estate duty tax or the inheritance tax, both of which are sorts of wealth taxes existing in South Africa, but we believe their rate could be increased. Another thing that could improve the progressivity of the tax mix is discussing and scrapping down the tax credits that are currently existing. Currently, high-income earners in South Africa that subscribe to private medical schemes benefit from 25 billion of rand in tax deduction. This was thought first to encourage high-income earners and employ South Africans to subscribe to medical schemes and get access to health facility easily. However, this means that we have a two-tier health system, and we believe this should be changed to have one health system for everyone and increase the progressivity of the tax mix. Next slide, please. Another way to better manage our public finances, we believe, is to manage differently the current South African debt. We see two main options to do that. The first is to use the GEPF, the Government Employee Pension Fund, and use its asset to write off a substantial amount of the public South African debt. If we do it today, that means that around two-thirds of the public debt would be written off at once, meaning that out of the 200 billion we are planning to pay this year in debt repayment, we would save like 130 billion. Obviously, that means that the state would have to top up a little bit for the financing of the public pension system and add like 25 billion to the 70 billion that employees, public employees, are currently contributing to the public pension system to match the benefits paid currently, which are 95 billion. But the gain, the net gain, is huge. Why is it so huge? Simply because currently the assets set aside in the public investment corporation are mismanaged. The return of investment of this fund is between 3.8% and 4.5% in the last 7 years. That means it's not even matching inflation. So these funds we have asked public employees to set aside weren't properly used, and what we're saying is let's use this fund to scrap the debt repayment cost the South African state is paying. A less radical solution would be obviously to use to put in place prescribed assets at a low interest rate for the state or state-owned enterprises to subscribe on. And this would mean that both the public investment corporation and the state would benefit. The public investment corporation because it would benefit from higher return on interest from 4.5 to 6%, and the state because it would pay less on its debt. So I think it's a win-win system, and so we should explore this kind of solution to decrease the debt cost. We're going to move to the recommendation slide, please. Next one? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I know that we are out of time. I'll just take 1 minute just to read out our recommendations. Okay, thank you. So we make a series of recommendations at the end of the submission. I just want to highlight a few of them to you. On macroeconomic policy, we're calling for a much greater focus on employment and economic growth in our monetary policy. We think that our macroeconomic policy has been too conservative, and this contributes to the stagnant growth environment. On fiscal policy, we urge the government to respond to the UN recommendations in relation to fiscal policy, which called for increased investment in social expenditure in order to manage our rising inequalities. Next slide, please. Owen has mentioned some of the tax measures which we propose, so I won't dwell on those again. If we can just have the last slide. Around state capacity, we are very concerned, Chair, that headcounts are being reduced, and in particular senior civil servants are leaving the public service at the very time that we do need to manage a number of crises. We think this is being done without a plan. We certainly haven't seen a plan for how this will improve efficiency or performance rather than just save in-year costs. We think, again, this is an austerity measure which is counterproductive to the state. Thank you.
Peggy, can you make your way here, please? Firstly, Dumisani, you'll translate, right? Michael. Firstly, let me just say, we have here...
Chair, we have... We have comrades. He will translate, but Comrade MK will translate.
Yeah, I know that. So I'm just saying, comrades and colleagues, just to remind you, we had last year the pensioners here. You'll summarize what I'm saying, right? And we welcome them in particular, not because they come from my hometown, which I'm proud of, but because we have said repeatedly, Michael, that the people who come to these hearings are the big stakeholders, Comrade Mahai, you know, the big trade unions like COSATU and so on, the big connected NGOs, the big business, private sector. Ordinary people don't come to these hearings. So it's unusual, and we welcome them. We made special arrangements for them, unlike last time, for what happens after the meeting, and we've got Michael to translate. To my eternal shame, can you say that again? To my eternal shame, I do not speak isiZulu fluently. There's no excuse for it, really. No excuse. It's outrageous, but we are where we are. I can only express, I knew you were going to raise that, contrition about it, and Peggy in Konyeni will take responsibility for this session. But in terms of parliamentary rules, there will be a translation, so we've allocated them twice the time that we allocate every other stakeholder. So I hand over to Michael to summarize and then to Peggy to take over. I will monitor the time. They've got 24 minutes. Thanks. With the translation, thanks.
Uthi kuyintokozo kakhulu ukuba khona wena ophakathi kwaleli komiti. Uthi ke okunye okumjabulisayo kungenxa yokuthi naye ubuye mgungundlovu. Akanamukeli ngoba ebuye ngumuntu ufuna ukubela njengekomiti uthi ke okumhlaza kakhulu ukuthi nje akakwazi ukukhulumisa izulu kufanele ngabe uyakwazi ukusikhuluma ukuthi ke kulokho senomthethelela ukuthi ke niyamukeleke ekomitini nizonikezwa isikhathi esingangemzuzu yamashumi amabili nane phakathi kwaleyo mzuzu kuzoba khona imzuzu yokuthi kusongwe ngesingisi lokho enizobe nikubeka ngesizulu uyabona
ngibonge kakhulu nami ukuthola ithuba mingelela kakhulu abahlonishwa bonke abakhona abaseva kuma-committees omabili ngibingelela omama basemgungundlovu gama lami upeg inkonyeni ngisuka KwaZulu Natal nami kodwa ngiseva kuleli komiti lezeyimali siyanamukela kakhulu isikhathi lesi ngokohlelo lwalesishayamthetho sokuthi silalele ukuthi imibono yenu ithini ngemuva kokuthi ungqongqoshe wezeyimali ebeke isabelo zimali ngesonto elidlulile. Manje nake sekuyisikhathi senu sokuthi sizwe ukuthi nithini, not nona kungabi yini nodwa kodwa bonke abantu abafuna ukubeka imibono yabo bamukelekile. So nikeza ke isikhathi njengoba sekushiwo ukuthi nibeke ukuthi nithini. Yes. Sesinganeza lelo thuba.
Sanibonani. Igama lami nginguThoko Ngubane waseMaritzburg kampumuze ePhayiphini. Sila singogogo baseMaritzburg. Singaqala ukufika sifikile last year ngo-October. Sizokhala ngesikhalazo sokuthi sicela ukuthi uhulumeni asiphe i-bonus. Sasibeka ke izinkinga nezindleke sinazo ukuthi size sicele le-bonus. Sabona nokuthi siqale late salindele ukuthi uma umongameli wethu esekhulume eqale evula iParliamente bazoyiphatha phela nalendaba yethu yebonus esicelile. Hayi sabheka sangathola lutho ukuthi kukhulunywe ngako. Safika ke futhi la uvula iParliamente sasala lapha emgaqweni lavela shona bese sibhala izincwadi singaphendulwa siziphethe nazi futhi siphethe sasithi silethe nepetition yokuthi sesinabantu abaningi akuseyona iMaritzburg yodwa sesino 30,000 wabantu abasayinile. Ekulindeleni kwethu last week saya kwishayamthetho saseMaritzburg salalela ukuthi ubaba wethu uTitombo wenu uzothini njengeekhalazo zethu. Sathola ukuthi ukhuphula ngo-R80 hayi sakhala kakhulu sasuka lapho sabhala incwadi ezala sabonga ukuthi nisamukeleke kuloko nasiphendula. Sikhalile ngalo R80 awulethile ngoba last year sikhushulelwe ngo-R100. Bese kuthi kulo nyaka bese yehla kusho ukuthi ke hayi kusho ukuthi uyehla uyehla. Uhulumeni wethu ekukhulumeni kwakhe kumeqala wathi uzokwenza imisebenzi engu-275,000. Imisebenzi azoyakha. Kula thina la eSouth Africa inkinga yethu asinayo imisebenzi. Abantu abangasebenzi bawu 1,7 million abangasebenzi. Okusho ukuthi umesho kanjena njengoba sinabantwana abaningi abangasebenzi njengamini nomfana no-36 years kusho ukuthi ene yena uyoqashwa eno-72 years ngoba phela bawu 1,7 million abantu yena imisebenzi ayenzayo 275,000. Manje siyakhala sizophinda futhi siyakhala ukuthi siyacela nisizwe lesisayicela le bonus ukuthi nisibonele ngoba nathi siphila khona le South Africa sithenga la kuthenga nina nonke singena la nikhona ingena khona nathi siyayikhokha iVAT ngoba kushika ukuthiwa la izalukwazi azizongena bempesheni ngoba bazothenga bona bazoyifaka. So nathi ke intela siyayikhokha, yize sesihleli la eSouth Africa ngoba siyayithenga, siyayifaka iVAT. Yilokho esizophinda impela impela ukuthi siyacela ukuthi asiphendule, asizwele, abe nonembeza njengobaba wethu. Akekho ubaba othi ingane zakhe mazikhala athule nje. Uba nenseka noma ethula lokho engikwenzile, hayi akukuhle, akusiphathanga kahle kuvula iParliament, ayiphathi nje sinokuthi sizwe indaba yethu yokukhala kwebonus. Yilokho-ke size ngakho. Futhi asizokuyeka Parliament elihle ukuthi sibe yiphele endlebeni siyoze siphendule. Uma kufika imihla ethi yafa mhlawumbe kufa mina, bazoqhubeka abanye. Mhlawumbe uma kufa abanye nami ngikhona. Soze sibize uJesu kube ubuya kweJesu koba ikoni nochazanywa phelina njengoba nila nikhethwe uNkulunkulu. Manje kudinga nibaseve ngendlela ezothokoza uNkulunkulu. Uma ningasisezi kuze kufike ukuphela kwemihla yenu, nani ke senolanda nisiphathe kanjani emhlabeni? Ngiyabonga.
I greet the committee chairperson. We are here as Greenies from Pietermaritzburg. We have come here last time to make submissions and request for a bonus for pensioners. We had hoped when the president was presenting his State of the Nation address, we hoped that he was going to consider us. We even came to Parliament to submit some petitions. We spent a lot of time standing there. The Minister of Finance as well presented the Division of the National Revenue. We had hoped that there was going to be something better for us since our request, but there has been nothing. And also in the State of the Nation address, the president presented that there will be job opportunities of about 275,000. And we all know that as a country, we do not have jobs. There is a number of about 1.7 million of unemployed people. My son, as I speak, is also unemployed, is at home. We all need jobs. And as Parliament, we want to understand that you all buy from shops where we all buy. The issues of rates affects us as it affects you. You must also know that you have been put here by God to serve the people. We expected our president as our father to do something for us, because we'll keep on crying. We'll annoy you by making these repeated submissions. We'll make it until Jesus comes back, because this parliament will be there and you're going to be there. If it happens that some of us, like myself, I pass on, others will advance this cause. Thank you.
Sibonge kakhulu. Mhlambe kukhona yina abafuna ukwenezezela kulokho sekushiwe umama uThoko Ngubane. Ungaqhubeka mama.
Ugogo uDlilawa kaMbasa lo eMaritzburg. eMaritzburg. Size lana nje ngokuthi sizokhala kuhulumeni wethu. Baba, manje nakuphelile sizile la, safika khasa wakhulumeka kahle lasathemba sathi hayi kusho ukuthi uzozwa ubaba wethu. Wangezwa ubaba wethu, sahamba sayolalela lapha makukhishwa lesabelozimali. Lesabelozimali asiphathwa nekusukuphathwa thina le mali yethu. Ufaka lo 80 randi nje sazi imali yokwenzani, okunoma ayikhuphula uyayehlisa. Yena nje basikhuluma naye kusho ukuthi thina akasazi. Akasazi nje akusazi ukuthi siyini. Uma sikhuluma naye futhi sithela amanzi emhlaneni wedatha. Uhamba nje into engayindawo. Ngoba phela uba ngabe uyasazi njengabantwana bakhe, ngabe uyasiphendula akhulume atsho ukuthi yini. kwenziwa yini engaphenduli. Ngiyabonga.
I'm Grenell Zeta from Pietermaritzburg. I greet the committee. We are here as we were here last time. We had hoped that our father, the president, would consider our request and make some provisions for us. But it appears that our request was not taken into consideration because 80 rand is nothing. We still plead that the president should give us something, because when the Division of National Revenue was presented by the Minister of Finance, we had hoped that there will be something for us. Thank you.
Siyabonga. Ukhona umuntu ofuna ukubeka.
Ngiyabonga uGoctorin Lo Dorin Taylor Emirtsburg. Okokuqala nje ngizobonga yena uhulumeni wethu ukuthi ke kwayona leyo mpesheni siyayithola. Noma ingasanelisi-ke kodwa siyayithola. Bese ke ngibonga ukuthi mhlambe ukube wathi ukuthi thasi kunalokho okuyikona. Maduze iParliament elizovalwa siyokhethweni. Akwaziwa ukuthi ene kobuya sekohobani. Besiyohlala njalo simkhumbula ukuthi hawu kodwa uhulumeni wathi thasi sajabula. So siyayicela bandla, siyayidinga. Sineyidingo eziningi ngendlela emangalisayo. Sikhokhela umasingcwabisane abambe qolo. Ugesi usihleli emahlombe. Ukhipha 50 rand uthenga ikhadi lagesi libuye no 47 kilowatts ngokuthi ugesi amakhilo ehlile. Siyacela bandla ukube uhulumeni uyasinika nathi okungconywana, besingakwazi ukuthi njengoba sesingogogo asisakwazi ukusebenza imisebenzi yasemakhaya, sikhuluma nje asinazo neyingadi, ngabe sithatha lokho esinako nathi siqashe okwabafanyana lokho okuhlele emakhaya kusenzela iy'ngadi, sithola amaveji aphuma ey'ngadini zethu. Ngoba sinalutho asikwazi nokwenzani. Ngisho ingane ithi igogo awungiphi itoho, ukuzibuza ukuthi kodwa ke mntanami ngizokunikani ngoba anginalutho. So siyacela bandla uhulumeni nathi akasicabangeli ukuthi sogogo sinezidingo okufuna la sizenze. Okuhle akusho ukuthi njengoba sesigugile asisakuthandi, asisakwazi. Siyakwazi, siyafisa ukwenza kodwa amandla awasekho. So iBhayibheli lithi phonsa lapho ungezuzuza khona ukuze umvuzo wakho ube phezulu ezulwini. Ngiyabonga.
Ukhona omunye osafuna nezezela?
Sanibonani. Ngiyanibingelela nje nonke ePhalamende. Ngingasaqalike ukufika la. Sasithembileke ekuqaleni sayitshela ukuthi mhlawumbe njengoba sesifikile saveza iy'khalazo zethu ney'mfuno zethu, mhlawumbe kukhona okungase kwenzeke ngoDisemba wonyaka ophelile. Cha, asibonanga lutho. Esikufisayo ke nje ke mangingaphosisi, mina thina sawogogo nje ngufikile ngwakagumede eMaritzburg endaweni ekaTambuza. Ngifisa ukuthi akuvumi sithule. Akekho umuntu othula elambile. Futhi akulaleki mawulambile. Ingakho ke namhlanje siphinde sabuya sathi asizokhothoza njengentombazane uRute eya hamba yayo khotho zensimini asenelisekile ngesinikezwe kona sisho ukuthi asikubonge kodwa uma uthatha ubheka ufike stolo uqala kokuqala nje ngoba sifisa nokungcwatshwa kahle nathi sithathe le madlana ekhona mhlambe ke ngilinganise ngithi ngo 250 ngiyokhokhela uma singcwatsana ngiphinde ngibuye ngithi angikhokhele ingane bese ngiyothenga sengisele ne 1000 akusekho lutho okuzophuma mangithenga impuphu noshukela mhlambe lozo zintwana okunye sengihamba ngicosha ngoba ngithi ngenzela ukuthi kutholakale enhlizweni yami ke singogogo nje sibhlungu kakhulu ukuthi ukuthi masekhishwa isabelo zimali kube into okwakuthi asiwele khona lapho uma sesiza ukuthi sinikezwa nje u80 rand into eyenza ukuthi ke mhlawumbe siphinde sesicela ibonus hayi ngobani sifika singogogo kunikezwe mhlamba amakhansela kuthi uhambani niyopha ogogo uma ogogo sebefikile uthola ukuthi akuzoyiwa kuloyamuzi kiwe kuloyamuzi ongakwa abanye ugcina bengatholanga lutho kanti makube siphiwa emholweni sithi ingene lapho ngabe sonke siyathola asitholi sonke khona bangakwazi ngisho ukusukuma phansi kodwa kuthiwe kuthiwe kuzonikezwa ogogo Khisimuzi kodwa asitholi lutho akufiki nakuthina kuzoba yilabo nje nalabo abefekthiwe hayi eMaritzburg uKhisimuzi ubufikile kanti awuzange ufike ukhethe loyo muzi leyo nje ebaliwe sasala siyinjalo ingakho sicela ibonus ukuthi mhlawumbe lokho angasipha kona singakwazi ukuthi mhlambe sonke sijabule ukuthi hayi ingane nginikile isitukusidi neyalapha neyalaphana ngoba elokhuzeni elathiwa sinikezwa khona asitholi lutho ngiyabonga Senibosile
I'll summarize both chapters firstly I want to thank our government for the fact that we do get a pension grant and we appreciate it because it does make a difference. But what we are yearning for is the government to give us a little bit of increment so that we can be able to do certain things. Like if you go and buy electricity, you find that the electricity unit in terms of kilowatts is too expensive. You spend money, you get a little bit of those. So we really plead that we do get that increment. Another thing is that as grannies, we are no longer having that energy to do certain things on our own. It would have been better for us, or we would have been in a better position had the government given us some increase so that we can even hire our own children who are unemployed to do certain things for us and pay them. We also want to remind the committee that in terms of the Bible, there is a saying that do give to others so that you will get in multiple. And this committee, or rather parliament, is about to close. And will go, then there will be election, and there will be other people elected. It would have been something better for you and the legacy if you would have given us some increase so that when other people come back, we shall have received such. And also, we came here, then in December, we were hoping that we were going to get something like bonus for December as we requested. But nothing has been forthcoming. We need to tell the committee that the committee must understand that there is no way we can keep quiet in this regard. We will keep on talking because no one can keep quiet when one goes to bed on an empty stomach. And also, if you get the money that we do receive currently, you go
and by maybe because we want to die with dignity. We pay maybe for the burial insurance about 250. We pay for kids at school from the same money. Then the remainder we take care of buying sugar and other groceries. Then the money is finished. And also there's another challenge, honorable members, that sometimes there will be some gesture from the government in terms of the municipalities to deliver some food parcels to grannies. But we want to inform you that such food parcels do come to our areas, but it will select and be given to certain households. And you will just hear about it that there was a round of food parcels being given around. Thank you.
See, siyabonga kakhulu gogo. Intombi zomkhulu.
Yes.
Sibonga kakhulu ukuthi nifile lapha. Si ngiyafuna ukusho ukuthi akukho nokukodwa njengoba thina simele umphakathi esikubukela phansi elikushoyo. Kakhulukazi ngoba niyabantu abadala siyazazi iy'nkinga enibhekene nazo. Ngizocela nje ukuthi mhlambe ngiyeluleke ukuthi kulabo abaniholayo abanilethe lapha. Kube nendlela yokuthi bashintshelele igama elithi bonus. Ngoba ngokwe understanding ya wonke umuntu i-bonus iyi 13 check oyithola uma kade khona umsebenzi owenzile esethi lo mqashi wakho uyakubonga. Ungcono mhlambe bayisho ngelinye igama ukuze nani ningabi ihlaya kwabanye abantu abalalela ukuthi nizothini. Iseluleko sami nje leso. Ngiyafuna ukusho futhi ukuthi uhulumeni isaka lakhe alilikhulu ngendlela abantu abacabanga ngayo ngoba kuningi okunye uhulumeni akwenzayo. Sizolalela ke kodwa ukuthi nithini akubona kwethu sileli komiti ukuthi senze iy'nqumo. Kodwa ngiyafuna ukuthi ngesi sikhathi senikhumbuze nje ukuthi ngoba siyazi ukuthi le mali isuke iqondene nani le eniyipho uhulumeni. Kukhona ezinye izinto uhulumeni anezezela ngazo njengokuthi nje abantwana badla esikolweni, uhulumeni uyazama ukufaka imali, kube khona ne-transport ehambisa abantwana ey'koleni, kanjalo kanjalo. Kodwa ke siyaku-understand-a konke lokhu. Funa nokukhumbuza ogogo ukuthi siphume esikhathini lapho kade ogogo nomkhulu bengayitholi khona imali yabo njalo ngenyanga. Kodwa manje sebeyayithola-ke njalo ngenyanga. And iyakhuphuka, noba ikhuphuka kancane kodwa khona kuba khona lokho okuwuchatha ogogo nabomkhulu abakutholayo. Ngisho ngoba akufanele ukuthi bese spenda nje kube ngathi akukho okuhle okwenziwa uhulumeni ecabangela abantu abadala bakithi. Kodwa ke mhlambe let me take this opportunity and ask members of parliament of the two committees maybe to pose questions to this organization that comes from Pietermaritzburg Pensioners Forum. Do you have questions to pose to them? Number 1, 2, 3, on that order.
Thank you very much, and thanks very much for your presentation. Thanks for coming to Parliament to give us your perspective. My understanding is that, well, the key issue is that promises were made to you and that nothing has happened. That is very, very unfortunate, absolutely. I think, however, if you keep voting for the same people, you get the same thing.
What promises are you talking of?
Excuse me, can you protect me, please?
Yes,
I won't have this shouting at me, no.
You're protected, but please elaborate on your point.
Terrifying. I'm saying from my understanding from the presentation is that was that they had appeared before at this committee. I was not in this committee before. Right. So they appeared at the committee before and that they had requested a bonus. That had not materialized and that they were very disappointed. And that when the minister had presented his budget, he had not said anything. And that they had had an expectation that they would have heard something. That's my understanding from the presentation.
Can I intervene? There's a report. You should speak to your researcher. There was no promise made to them. They had an expectation. That's a separate matter. Michael, will you translate? It's John, it's in writing. So, Alan, Tebo, just give him the report. The report was voted on in the committee. There was absolutely no promise made. There was empathy, not only empathy, sympathy, moral support, but we said within the budgetary constraints, it is unlikely that they will get double, what they mean by bonus, of course, as Peggy explained, double in December of the normal pension amount. You know that's not possible as well, right? But what we did say, Dion, and it's not fair, you've got a researcher I can't cover and you've got lease, you must do the homework, please. This committee doesn't go back to 2016 when you left, but let me put this to you. What we did say was the VAT was going to have a very bad effect on not just the Peter Maritzburg and St. Ducey pensioners, but everybody. And we asked the government to cushion the effects of the VAT on the poor. That is something all members, I think, across political parties agreed on. COSATU engaged on its own with the structures of the alliance and presumably with the minister too, and they have a complaint. That is all. But there was no promise made. You know, we'd be foolish to make a promise when we know they expect. It's irresponsible. It is demeaning to people. It is lying to them. We would never do that. So there's no promise made. They had an expectation. And Peggy is trying to clarify that there was no promise made.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Can I
summarize, please? You'll get your full chance, sorry. Just so the pensioners are on board. Although they do understand English, but still, to be fair.
Firstly, Chair, I omitted something during my earlier interpretation. There was a very important issue Gogo's raised. They said, although they are based in Pietermaritzburg, they started in Pietermaritzburg as a forum, but now they've expanded to other areas in the country, and they have more than 30,000 members. And with respect to the issue the Chair is discussing with the Honourable Member, my interpretation was that, in fact, the actual presentation from GOGOS is that they came last year to make a submission. Out of that submission, there was a hope that by December there will be bonus. Asachazelana malunga ukuthi ibona kuphe nikwethulile umhlonishwa lo uzobuza umbuzo ukakabuzo. Ngiyabonga.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much. Thank you for clarifying. I don't think I've lost anything in translation then. So what happened was this group of pensioners, vulnerable people who are now a national organization, came to Parliament last year and they made presentation to this committee to say that they would hope that they would get a bit of extra relief given their circumstances and that they'd come here and presented that and that there were no promises made then, but that there was a hope that there would be something. Now clearly that hope has not materialized, that obviously that hope has been dashed. And I think the response that you have heard from this committee, certainly not from me, but from this committee, is that although you did come here and you made the presentation and you are in difficult circumstances, that what you expected or would have liked to have seen is not going to happen because it's just not going to happen. And I think that's the point that I'm making, is that that is what you've got, is you've got that your expectation is not going to be met. And obviously, as I said before, if you vote the same way, nothing will ever change. Thank you. Chief, well,
Yani understand bo gogo ukuthi si osopolitika abaqhamuka emaqembini ama ahlukahlukene. Lo baba nje uqeda ukukhuluma la uqhamuka ku DA. Manje usezama ke ukupolitika ke ngale matter. Okay.
Just on a point of order, Chair.
All right. Number two.
On a point of order, Chair.
Yes.
On a point of order, sir, please.
Been given a platform. Can I proceed?
On a point of order, Chair. I think it's very insulting and nonsensical for somebody to insult our people right here in full view of everybody else. I mean, I don't care how you think you are political, but you're insulting the intelligence of African people right across you, sir. You're saying if they vote, this is what they get. And you call yourself democratic on the one hand. Now, deal with the issues at hand, and that's what you should be dealing with. And I take an extreme exception from this kind of an approach and articulation, which basically insults the intelligence of an African person. That, I think, it's unacceptable, Chair. And this gentleman has got to withdraw this, because it can't be correct.
Okay. Maybe you need to interpret both what Honorable John and Honorable Ntlego have said. Point of order, yes.
A point of order is this. Words are being put into my mouth, which is incorrect. We are having a very difficult translation, and it's not being translated correctly. What I said was, I've already said, you can look
you
at the record. Excuse me.
You lost nothing in translation. So what are you talking about?
It seems as if we are twisting what I said. That's
no,
what the point I'm making,
nobody's
Chair.
Nobody's twisting anything.
I will not have that, Chairperson. I won't have it. I will not have words put into my mouth.
Okay.
I will not have it.
Okay, Dion, calm down. Nati, firstly. He said,
you're not on the floor, my brother.
He seems to be knowing everything about what people would say. Nati, you're not on the floor. Can I suggest, this is really unseemly. This is not what we should be doing when you have ordinary people at a public hearing. Yeah, but you're also contributing, and so is Nati. Well, right. No, hang on. Can we please now? Fine. Can you calm down, please? You've got no right to speak here right now. No, it's Nati. If you don't respect the chair, you have a right to leave. And I have a right, in terms of the rules, to ask you to leave and Nati to leave. I've checked on that before. And we've done it with your predecessor here, Mania, to leave. Now, go and check the rules if you like. Consult your lawyers. I'm telling you to keep quiet, and I'm telling Nati, please, my brother, you're a former chief whip, right? And you know the score. Now, firstly, I don't think Peggy should translate, to be fair, herself. It must be Michael. You're the official translator. Now, that's the first thing. Secondly, those of us who do not speak isiZulu, we have a problem. Not the people who speak isiZulu. Let's get that clear. In my case, I come from KZN. There's no excuse. I do not want to be mollycoddled. And I understand enough to know what's going on. If 25 years later, Parliament cannot allow people to speak their mind in an indigenous language, it's not an indictment on them. It's an indictment of us who don't speak, including Dion and me, an indigenous language. I don't know which province he comes from. In my case, it's isiZulu. Right. Now, here it is. It is not unparliamentary for Dion to say, well, it's for election time, therefore vote for my party. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's something certainly wrong with his complete misrepresentation of what they were saying without checking the facts, and I've addressed that. Nati has every right to feel the way he does. He doesn't have to apologize to Mr. Dion George for that, and there's no need for that. He has every right to say that. So there's a disagreement between the two of them. Can you deal with this outside this meeting, please? Right? Well, I'm not entertaining anything from either Dion or Nati. We are at least half an hour behind time because we took 25 minutes to deal with a simple matter about what do we take to the NCOP in terms of the Financial Matters Amendment Bill. So, it is Charles and I who are the co-chairs here. Peggy's helping with this regard. She's the co-chair right now when the isi Zulu speaking component of this public hearing. We should have simultaneous translation. We've asked for it years ago. It hasn't happened. I want to apologize, right, to the pensioners and say I regret this, but now we're going to focus on the issue. Dion, can you please address your issue? Michael, can you translate each question at the end of the question? Thank you. Right. Can you please, understanding the sensitivities, you and I, it's not them, you and I have to be careful because we don't speak a language. I don't know if you do, but it seems you don't. So, over to you now. Please put your question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for clarifying that. I also want to just state, and please translate it correctly, I have absolutely no intention.
He's an independent. You see, it's uncalled for. I withdraw that. Is there any sign Michael has been skewed in his translation? If you don't understand the language, how can you conclude that he actually has misrepresented what you said?
I have not said that.
That's what you said. You said please translate correctly, implying
Chair,
he may not translate
Chair,
correctly.
Point of order.
He's a professional.
Chair, on a point of order. No, Chair. It's going to relate to the translator. Actually, I passed a remark earlier on when Comrade MK was translated that he's a very good translator because he actually translated verbatim word for word what was said except what he forgot. And I want us to clarify that part as part of procedure that there must not be any confusion that what he has translated is not adequate.
The second procedural issue, Chair. Okay, quickly.
I suggest that let all the questions come and be responded to at the end. And also, I want us to stick to the rules. The rules allow interjections. There is nothing wrong with any member to interject a member of the platform if he or she makes a ridiculous point. It's allowed by the rules. Thanks.
Right.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Dion, let me also put something to you. You're new here, but you're not in this committee, so perhaps we won't see you again. But insofar as you're in this committee, we've allowed, I'm talking about myself, not you, we allowed interjections to a limited extent. We allow, no other committee does, people to come here till the last day on a public hearing, as we did the carbon tax bill. So you'll have to accept the majority view. Your members did. If you don't want to accept it, tough. So we do allow a measure of interjection. You can also needle Tandi within certain limits. You don't like that? Tough. Okay, thanks. Now, can you please go now, because of time, I'm limiting all of you. Yeah, here we start. Okay. So everybody's got up to 2 minutes. Start. Okay. Including me. What?
Okay, thank you very much. I will just get into the question. I want to know from the delegation is whether they still have that expectation. So if they're asking again this year that they would want the committee and or executive to consider their plight and increase the support that they do get. Thank you very much again for coming.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Ngizothi ukukhuluma isiZulu ngoba ngiyabona ukuthi interpretation is a very difficult thing. But where I'm going to talk English, ngizocela ukuthi interpret. Ithi ngiqale ngokuthi iBhayibheli ibhaliwe ukuthi for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life. UJesu ngeke abuye, use uye weza. Manje abomama laba beze la bane hope ukuthi bazothola usizo. But i-80 rands ilehlazo abogogo wethu bona. What they are trying to say, even if uthi akusi bonus sipheni imali engcono, during apartheid ipension kade ikhona, we were there, but kade ingalingani. Namhlanje yalingana but bacela engconywana. What is the problem ngokuthi nibabize baze la every time but kungena into inibenzela yona? That is what we are asking ourselves. If at all bathi bayanthemba we can say, please, President, can you help with this matter? Singabulukisi ba letter lapha bazo and the presentation every time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Comrade Nakola. Thanks, Chair. Thank you so much. Ndiyabingelela kwabogogo and ndifuna ukuthi bazi ukuthi sijabulile ngempela ukuthi babe khona apha. Futhi ndifuna ukuthi ogogo bethu bazi ukuthi kwimbali yethu bekungalulanga ukuthi abantu baze ngolu hlobo kwindawo yasepalamente. Ndifuna ukuthi ogogo bazi ukuthi kuhle xa bethebeza phambi kwethu. Kukhona imibuso eyayingavumi ukuthi abantu bavule imilomo bathethe ngendlela abafilisha ngayo. Kodwa namhlanje sinombuso ovumayo. Asinguwo umbuso obizayo, but umbuso ovumayo. Xa bathe abantu sifuna ukuza, umbuso uyanqwala uthi yizani sibonisane njengokuba iBhayibhile sisho. Ndiyabona nami iBhayibhile ininzi namhlanje kule ntlanganiso, makhe ndibonise namba ndiyayazi iBhayibhile ukuba ithi yizani sibonisane. Bomama bam, ndiyafuna ukuba ndikhona kwintlanganiso enanikuyo kunyaka ophelile and ndiyafuna ukuthi ulwabiwo lwemali, uhlahlo lwabiwo lwemali alurespondi kwisikhalo senu. Ne, ndifuna ni-understand ukuthi uhlahlo lwabiwo mali lona belusenzeka the normal way, ukuthi urhulumente uyayiqonda into yokuthi i-grant ayikho enough, but sizokuyikhuphula i-grant ngokwamandla esinawo ngoku. Ewe, ndiyavuma last year ibikhutshulwe nge-R100. Ukuba uyakhumbula uzova nabazukulwana nabantwana bazothi, hey, sagcina ukunyuselwa imali sifumana i-increment ngo-2017. Comrade Nakola, 20. Please summarize. Okay, thank you, Chair. But Chair, andifuna ukuthi le ndaba yokunyuswa kwemali yogogo yenzeka within i-budget e-constrained. Kodwa urhulumente waba committed ukuthi izonyuka yona. But it is not yet, as I said, i-response kuni. Ndifuna ukuthi bazali bam, umama osesihlalweni sele etshilo wathi kunezinye izinto. Umzekelo, le nto yokukhutshulwa kwemali kamnandi ivela kuni bomama, ne, ukuthi ingakhutshulwa ngendlela ezininzi. Umzekelo, uGoflow uyatsho ukuthi ingakhutshulwa ngokuthi sinikezwe indlela yokuthi silime sibe nengadi.
Ivalile manje, ngiyavala manje noxoxo.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you. All right, come with Nat.
No, thanks, thanks, Chair. I do think, though, that perhaps at a broader policy level, there's something that we do need to understand far beyond the submissions that have been made by the elderly here. For me, the question is, how do we essentially and earnestly begin to address ourselves to the social gaps that we have in our society? For how long shall it be that the elderly, particularly African and blacks in general, must come begging? And for how long do we want to think that we need to essentially depend, to largely rely on the dependency syndrome insofar as issues of development are concerned and so on? And I think that's the real issue. And therefore, for me, their presence and their submission here represents the real problem in our society. And that's what you should be confronting. As opposed to trivializing this issue as it happened in this particular meeting and thinking that we are big and we're important and we think we know it all and so on, when we actually don't, because this is the real problem that we have got to deal with. How do we begin to address ourselves effectively to this particular question? Now, and it's something that, yes, ourselves as public representatives here, we must also discuss, but also importantly, it's a matter for society to deal with. At some point, Honorable Chair, we may have got to consider a session basically that begins to a broad-ranging kind of session, including, by the way, NGOs and social-based sort of organizations, to begin to input around this particular question, because this is not sustainable. I can bet you one thing, in 2020, Abu Mama will also be here raising exactly the same thing. Is that what we want? And we'll be also having another set of people here who will be mocking them, you know, and insulting their intelligence in their own presence, not in their absence.
My 2 minutes as well, right? So let me time myself. Firstly, as I remember the majority view, Michael, it's that we empathize with the pensioners. Morally, we're with them. But practically, we cannot double. We don't think this committee can propose it simply because it's not doable. That's the only reason, firstly. With the growth rates being what they are, etc., and the pressures on Bob, what we can do and we will do is propose to the Appropriations Committee, which deals with this matter more directly, that this whole matter be dealt with in the medium-term budget policy statement. Secondly, the points Nati makes are correct. There is an entire review of the social grants, Nati, that Batabile Dlamini had started, right? And that matter must be finalized. It's linked to a further outstanding matter of the pensions, the Provident Fund story. So I think Nati is right. The younger people who are currently getting grants have to be moved out of grant dependency to jobs. Can you tell them that 27% of our population receives grants? It's one of the highest in the world. And as Nati says, there are more fundamental issues. Finally, I've got at least another 48 seconds. So I want to say something. Shell suggested here, and he chairs the NCOP, that maybe we have a sectoral meeting with them in Msundusi, right? So we can't prescribe to the next parliament. But in our report, picking up on what Nati is saying, we could start with maybe, and whether I'm in parliament or not, I'm happy to come, whoever the committee chair is, if they want me to come. And I live there anyway. To come to a meeting where we meet with them and, you know, take this thing forward. So we want to thank them for coming. We are sympathetic, but we're not making any promises. We can merely recommend a significant increase in the grant, and for that there has to be economic growth. Whichever party says what, the truth is, the fact is they should not be used by any party. The truth is, with the economic growth rates being what they are, the room for an increase is very limited. But we fully support and re-emphasize in our report the need to cushion the effects of the VAT increase. Finally, colleagues, this is strictly speaking an appropriations matter. My sister, this should go to the Appropriations Committee. It shouldn't come to this committee, but because you've insisted to come to this committee, we've allowed it. But the rules actually, isn't that right, Frank? Now I'm dealing as a chair, right? I'm a 223 as a member of this committee, but now as a chair, I'm dealing with facilitation. Frank, am I not right? This matter now goes to the Appropriations Committee. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair, that's correct. Sorry.
You're more than welcome, but you must lobby at the provincial legislature as well. And we will come to Peter Maritz, but not we, the committee, will send somebody before October this year. Thank you.
On that point, which is a very important point, Co-Chair Karim made, on the 14th and 15th of March, in each province, there will be public hearings on the Division of Revenue Bill 2019, in each province. That will be conducted
by the provincial legislator, where we as members of the Select Committee for Appropriations go to our respective provinces to assist in briefings and public hearings. Thank you, Chair.
Okunye kuzoba imibuzo, okunye kube ukuphawula kwamalungu. Ilungu lokuqala elikhulumile umhlonishwa ngaphesheya kwethu, noma ngingalazi igama, akabizwa ngamagama amalungu ephalamende. Uthi ukhala ngokuthi umhlonishwa neza nafike nenza isethulo, nichaza lokho enanikucela, kepha kwangahlangabezwana nawo. Akuhlangatshezwananga nakho, kepha naninalo ithemba. Uthi ke kulelo themba ebeninalo, ithemba lele nohlala nalo elingeke lize lihlangabezeke. Njengoba nisela namanje nila nje anizukuthola lutho. Emva kwakhe kube sekusukuma umhlonishwa ubabuhlewe umhlonishwa ubaba uShabanga. Ubaba uShaba ngokhala ngokuthi ke ikomiti livumelane ukuthi nise ekomiti nizokwenza isethulo, nifake isicelo yobana nisifakele nangaphambilini uma ikomiti lazi ukuthi lona uqoba linawo amandla ngokwemthetho yokwabiwa kwezimali ukuthi kuhlangabezwane nesicelo senu. Kungani niselana manje? Ubeke secaphuna ke mamgumede eBhayibhelini lathi ucaphune khona, kodwa ke lungisa ukuthi uNkulunkulu wayenikelile ngoJesu ukuthi azosindisa abantu, ngeke abuye. Sedlule siye kubabundleko. Ubabundleko ukhala ngokuthi kubuhlungu ukunibona kwakhe la nizile. Kuhle kona nize nibeke iy'khalazo zenu. Kepha kubuhlungu ukuthi kube inkinga le engakwazi ukuthi ixazululeke okwamanje. Uthi ke le nkinga ifuna ukubhekwa ezingeni lokwakhiwa nokukhandwa kwenqubomgomo. Eke sibheke ukuthi makwakhiwa inqubomgomo yokwabiwa kwezimali nokugunyazwa kwezimali, ngabe yiphi indlela engenzeka ukuthi abantu, umphakathi wonke, ayine nakuphela, umphakathi wonke usizakale ukuze sikhiphe loba buhlungu bokuncika ezinsizeni zikahulumeni ngaso sonke isikhathi. Wathi kuyafuna kuhlalwe phansi na umphakathi nawe unikwe ithuba kube kwimbono ukuboniswa ukuthi eyiphi indlela ekungenziwa ngayo ukuze kusizwe umphakathi ukutakula ezimweni zokuthi wethembele kakhulu ezinsizeni lezi esuke zivela kuhulumeni, ngoba ngesinye isikhathi akubi lula. Uthe futhi ke kuyamkhathaza ukuthi uma senifikile ke la ekomitini kube khona amazwana okuhlekisa ngani ngathi nizele ukuzodlala lapho. Waphela lapho kwasekungena emva kwakhe ke uSihlalo. Ngizonichazela abantu abadala ngilihlukanisele. La ekhaya kunamakomiti amabili abhekele izimali. Khona ikomiti ekuthiwa yilezimali, leli ibhekele izimali zonke zombuso, kube khona ikomiti eligunyaza ukwabiwa kwazo. Kuthi ke uSihlalo fanele kubhekwe ikomiti leli eligunyaza izimali ukuthi lingenze njani ngesikhathi kuhlelwa ukwabiwa kwezimali, ukuthi kugunyaza ukuthi kube khona indlela engabiwa ngayo izimali esizweni sonke. Usethi futhi na lokho kungasiza ukuthi kulabo bantu abasoke bencike kakhulu ezimalini zosizo lukahulumeni ama-grant basizakale bangathembele emagrantini kakhulu. Wayesethi ke uyafisa ukuthi kube khona ithimba elizophuma lijutshwe lemgungundlo kwemsunduzi, eke lohlalisana phansi nomphakathi kube khona izindlela namakhambi akhiwa ukuthi kukwazi ukuthi kusizakala abantu kubandakanya nani phakathi. Ubaba lo ophezulu lapha naye uSihlalo waleli komiti, uSihlalo babili, uye ubaba nobaba lo ubaba uDebbie. Ubaba uDebbie uthi yena ke ningakhathazeki, kuwona lo ophezulu izifundazwe zonke izishathetho zezifundazwe zizobe zinembizo zemiphakathi ukuyokwethula izabelo mali nokuthi kuxoxiswane nemphakathi, ngoba imali njengoba yabiwe nje endlunkulu kuzwelonke
ziphumile izabelo eziyeyifundazweni ukusizakala kwabantu eyifundazweni kufanele manje kuyolalela iy'mbizo kulalela iy'phakamiso zabantu okuyinto ezokwenzeka mhla ka-14 nomhla ka-15 kumashi nonyaka. Ngiyabonga.
Ngiyabonga kakhulu. Ngicabanga ukuthi kuyezwakala, kodwa-ke nginganikeza umama Ngubane nje yena yedwa ukuthi mhlambe aphawule kulokho sekubekwe abahlonishwa.
Ngiyabonga. Okungiphatha kabi nje uma ngibona ni-debater ngathi thina sibe silambe ngempela. Ngoba sila sisizwe lezo nhlangano ezisisizayo ngoba zisihawukela. Hlaseze nivula iparlamente sihlale lapha emgaqweni kwasasebusuku. Sibhalile incwadi na umongameli simbhalela. Singabuyelwa mpendulo. Kubuhlungu ngoba sinethemba makuwuhulumeni wakithi omnyama olwazi usizi lomuntu omnyama ukuthi ulunjani. Sinethemba kakhulu masibona kanjalo. Siwaphethe amapetition esasiwaphethe kuvula iparlamente sahlala lapha nakhona sasibhalile. Nencwadi besibhala. Okube buhlungu ukuthi kanti masibhala abantu abaphansi abaphendulwa yini. Ngiyangizwa esikhathi uma ngilalele nje kukhulunywa egradweni kuthiwa hhayi lolo daba sizodlulisa siyoliqoxa liqoxe kuthiwa siyalifaka. Kanti anihlali naye ke angazi ngokwami nangemfundo yami ephansi. Anihlali ngwanaye ubaba wethu uCyril Ramaphosa sambhalela naye. Sacela kuye nangqo. Uthi ngwase sizame kaningi kubaba uMboweni ake sibuyele kuyena. Angazi kanti anihlangani mhlambe nayo nazi sikhala iy'ngane ezayo. Siyabonga ke kodwa ukusamkela kwenu. Uma ngingakalungi nangonyaka ozayo nisazosibona bazalwane. Koze kuphele imihla uNkulunkulu azayithinte onembeza benu. Ngoba kuyenzeka kwesi sikhathi thina sidestroy lutho siyacela. Uze kuthiwa bulawe lokhu replace kubalwa amabhilweni. Ama-office, destroy, imali ingekho kodwa kwenziwe, kade kwenziwe umphathi. Thina nje siyacela ngomusa, hayi nangenkani, hayi nangenhlamba. Kodwa sithathwa njengendlela, esibona ukuthi sithathwa ngayo. Ngiyabonga. So 3.5 izali kwazi la eSouth Africa. Uma nje oba kuyo ekhetheni singahlala, sithi nathi hayi sesisonga izandla. Kungakubi nabantu abethu esibendla kuthi oma behla benyuka inani elikhulu kabi lelo bazalwane. Amen.
Thank you, Shepherd. What hurts me the most is to see members of parliament debating about us. It's really hurting because on the 7th, when there was SONA, we were outside parliament with our submissions, and we have always been hoping that our president leading our government will in a way help us because this is our government. But what makes us wonder is whether people who are downtrodden are not being listened to. We still have hope even here in our bags we are in possession of additional submissions. And also what we wonder about is whether or not you do get an opportunity to meet with the President and the Minister of Finance and discuss these matters. Because on our own we'll keep on coming here. Next day we are coming, we'll keep on coming here until forever. And also I want to bring to your attention that in the entire country there is about 3.5 million grannies who are eligible voters.
Hayi ke siyabonga kakhulu komama. Ngicabanga ukuthi ningakhululeka, kodwa ke ngifisa ukugcizelela le kade shiwo umhlonishwa ukuthi ngomhla ka 14 nomhla 15 kuMarch kuzobe neminye imihlangano emaprovinsini. Shuthi nani anokuya lapha eprovinsini eKwaZulu Natal niyokwenza i-submission yenu ngoba isabelo seyimali siya nakhona kuma-provinces. ngakho ke siyaniguquzela ukuthi niye khona. Siyabonga kakhulu, nihambe kahle masenipindele emakhaya.
Thank you very much, Siyabonga, to all of them. Thank you very much. Just to say, firstly, in my final reply, that please assure them we're with them, and we do meet the minister, and here sitting is National Treasury, and on Friday morning, they will respond to what the pensioners have said. So we will also raise it repeatedly, but we are making no promises. If you can just say that.
Thanks, Mike. Ezithuleni zenenzenzile uthi usihlalo njengegameni lekomiti uyabonga kakhulu ngokufika kwenu nikwazi ukuzokwenza izethulo uyabonga.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we move on now to COSATU and Budget Justice Coalition comments, questions? Are there none? Okay, so basically can I raise something very quickly? One is that if you consider the submissions, especially COSATU, broadly, if you look at where the majority in this committee is, again, we're sympathetic. We're not sure what's possible in the constraints. I mean, people like Tony know the economy far better than most of us here. And, you know, it's a matter of putting pressure on government. Parliament will make its point of view clear. But it's not as if at this stage we can make any decisions. It's next week. National Treasury will be here on Friday. Is that correct? On Friday, I think, and then you can reply if you want. So the procedure in this committee is you make submissions, National Treasury replies. That will be on Friday. Is that correct, National Treasury? You'll be on Friday, 9:30. Then we give you a chance to reply, and then National Treasury replies. Now, I want to ask the Budget Justice Coalition, can you tell me in writing, which country in the world does a parliamentary committee do that? Which finance committee, please? And which finance committee allows, up till the day you vote on a bill, like the carbon tax, as much as they were abusive, what's it, African reality, climate change, highly abusive, but in a highly abusive article in Business Day, Daily Maverick, subsequently, and just false, actually. But here we are, we get abused by NGOs as well, you know. But basically, what I'm saying in short is, You come back to me with that, please, right? Show me which committee anywhere in the world, apart from Nicaragua when the revolution occurred, right, allows that, right? So when you say you didn't have enough time, well, yes and no. Firstly, you know full well that on the second Wednesday, on the Wednesday after the budget, we consider submissions. The routine has been set since 2014. The budget is only released to the public and the committee at the same time. Thirdly, the Money Bills Act has set certain restrictions. We've now changed that. Fourthly, as I understand it, I cannot speak for the new committee. It's the last time it will happen like this. Am I correct? You passed the amendments to the Money Bills Act. Yes. The reason it has happened now is because of this elections coming up. So show me. Show me in which parliament in the world, on the eve of an election, you have such substantial times to process the elements of a budget. So short of a world socialist revolution, I can't see that happening. So until we have a proletarian revolution and the workers are in power, some of these things are not possible. So I take it you are all Marxists because you want the quality of democracy that happens in no social democracy. Look at Sweden in the 60s, maybe you might get it, Nicaragua after the revolution. So can we avoid rhetoric like you had only 2.5 days? You had already planned your submission. So actually, I don't want to debate about it, write to me. So let's focus on the issues, right? Firstly, we will look at your submission more carefully. Let me make it clear to those of you who are new to this committee. We read every comma and every full stop between the chairs. And Zakhele Shlope is here. and Antonio Manamela is here, and they're very good. We put down all your submissions on a grid, as does National Treasury, and we respond to each of those submissions. I don't know how many other committees do that. So we will listen to Treasury, and then we will think things through. But many of the things you say, in value terms, are reasonably consistent with the national democratic transition that the ANC is committed to. We don't have a problem. It's what's practical and what's doable. For example, to come here and say you want 100% employment, who's going to disagree with you? You want the end to class, if that's what you say. Right? Well, many of us will agree, not all, even in the ANC. So the thing is that, you know, I'm pleading with you that you have to have a tactical sense. You know, in other words, what is doable? You have to have an understanding of the balance of power, the framework, the terrain in which we're operating. So we've engaged with you repeatedly, but you still hold to your views, which is your right. But it makes it very difficult. We can say, right, okay, we agree with you and most of us, well, I do, speaking by myself, with many, almost all the things you say, most of the things. But your practical answers are difficult for us to manage in the current context, as I can say. Now, on the VAT cushioning, Tony, we have no disagreements with you. No disagreements. You've got no problem with us. We put it in our report. As we've repeatedly said to people, you can't come to Parliament and expect fundamental changes or flexing your muscle in other ways. You have the organizational muscle, okay? COSATU has. So you must engage in campaigns. You must protest outside, obviously non-violently and whatever, within the law. Protest. Bring hundreds and hundreds of people out there on the tarmac outside Parliament. Okay. Then you put pressure on the government. So your problem is not with us as a study group. We agree. Then on the sugar tax, yes, we are. We took both the sugar tax and the carbon tax bill, Tandi, through the NEDLAC process, unprecedented, okay? There again, you're in NEDLAC. What are you doing there? Right? We can do so much and no more. We cannot have the power to intervene in the way you do. You're inside NEDLAC, Tony. The point I'm trying to make is we said we will monitor, colleagues, the effect of the sugar beverages tax. We struck various deals, even on the carbon tax bill. Now, when we exit, Tony, we are going to write and say, can you please monitor? So I would like to suggest, Comrade Tandi, we put it in our report, that we recommend to the incoming committee that every quarter they meet with NEDLAC on the sugar beverages tax and on the carbon tax to see to what extent the commitments made in NEDLAC are effected. But Tony, we can do so much. So over to you, Tony, your responses. Then the third thing you raise, on SARS, we want to suggest you things are moving. The illicit business center has been revived. They've moved on Mazzoni. They're moving on somebody else, is what I pick up from the media. They don't share with me anything, and they shouldn't. On the issue of state-owned entities, there's a forum created, and we wish it well. We want concerted negotiations around the so-called unbundling of ESCOM and so on, but that falls more under public enterprises. But broadly, we would support concerted negotiations. The President said he would do it. The Minister said he would do it. You have to hold them to account on the Public Enterprises Committee. Over to you, Tony.
Thank you very much for those sentiments, and of course we're glad that there's agreement conceptually about how much more we must do for our people. We will continue to pressure from our side, and as is the democratic process, hope that we can get government to move on some of the additional areas we want. On the sugar and the carbon tax, of course, we'll continue to work with Parliament on that, and we'll take up the structures in NEDLAC to make sure that we're able to take these matters further. And then the VAT issues, we look forward to some response from the executive on that. Thank you.
Offline, I'd like you to answer a question. How is it that you remain so young and you get younger by the day? But that we'll talk after. Okay. Over to Budget Justice Coalition. 2 minutes to you.
Thank you, Chair. We don't consider our proposals radically Marxist proposals. Most of them were contained in the report of the United Nations Committee to South Africa, and we would like Parliament to recognize that we have ratified that treaty. We are obligated to respect that the obligations which flow from that ratification. And that committee looked at a lot of submissions. It looked at 14 submissions from civil society organizations. It looked at lots of reports from the government, and it came to similar conclusions to what we presented to you today, which is that the austerity policies are not the only solution. In fact, they're not a solution. We can show that when we cut government expenditure, we reinforce cyclical patterns in the economy. And so we would like, at the end of this term, less camaraderie around the status quo and more fresh thinking from our politicians, from our MPs, about what solutions are possible to actually make a dent in unemployment to start growing the economy. And that's the approach that we put forward, and we put forward quite a lot of concrete proposals in our submission. It's not pie in the sky. Finally, I just want to say that we are working with the National Treasury on budget participation issues. In South Africa, we have a very open budget process, and we have a huge amount of gratitude for that fact. However, we do rank very low in terms of public participation. So although there is access to information, the actual participation in the budget process is much lower.
I don't disagree with anything you just said, except the first point, but that's neither here nor there. I think we thank you very much for your submissions. Let's move on. Can we suggest to those of you here, it's the usual culprits, as it were. So we all talk about the poor. Well, the poor were here. So, hey, nobody complains about their times being cut. We can predict what you're going to say in any case, okay? So what we are suggesting, Charles, you've got to be brutal with time. I've got a practical problem. I have to leave here at 13:00 for another commitment. We're starting at 15:00. So I suggest, colleagues, because it's not fair also, people have flown in from Joburg and so on. Remember, we're not going to take any decisions. We're going to read your submissions. So I would suggest with your cooperation, and even without your cooperation, 10 minutes each, and then question time, and we can finish at 13:30. And the SCOF doesn't have to meet because we've taken a decision already. Thanks. So I'll hand over to my brother here, who's co-chairing.
Thank you, Honour Karim, co-chair Karim. To our stakeholders, next Friday is the 8th of March, the morning, 9 o'clock. In Parliament, there will be public hearings on the Division of Revenue Bill 2019. There's another opportunity for you to come and make presentations. Just consult the committee secretary. The advertisements appeared in the media over the weekend. And then also when we visit our provinces, those notices will be in the papers in the respective provinces. And then some homework for us, for all of us. Professor Hausman is from Harvard University, and he made a few inputs in a paper, Raising South Africa's Speed Limit, an inclusive economic growth in South Africa. So there's some homework for all of us to stimulate us and to take South Africa forward. Professor Rousseau, Fiscal Cliff Study Group, as co-chair indicated, 10 minutes. Honourable members, you've got the paper in front of you. Thank you, Prof. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. The outline of this presentation, the committee gave homework to all the presenters at the MTBPS presentation at the end of October. We want to report on the homework you've given us. Then we want to update you on the fiscal cliff, and then we want to look at budget details and then a few recommendations. Now, the first point is, this is what this budget is about. It's the people versus the government, or the government versus the people. The people are fishing, and the government takes fish from the people. And the big problem is the inefficiencies, corruption, etc., in the government distributing the fish. We do understand that we need redistribution, but the government has broken down. We are sitting with a broken down government, corruption, etc. I don't have to dwell on it.
Order.
We all know it. But
stakeholder gets the opportunity to present, please. Thank
but
you.
We need increased efficiency in the government. So, on the homework, the first question was on the Laffer curve. We looked at the tax buoyancy, which is now lower than 1. So we are not agreeing with the Budget Justice Coalition. We feel that higher taxes will now lead to lower income rather than to higher income. If we increase taxes any higher, we will have less income. We are past the top of the Laffer curve. We cannot raise taxes any further. We see it in the tax buoyancy, which is the indicator we use. Admittedly, there are other indicators. Then Treasury's real GDP forecasts, the other homework we were asked to look at, the forecasts are really bad. They really make weather forecasters look good. What we do think is very important is in the budget review published with this budget last week, additional information was provided regarding the assumptions used in the economic forecast by the Treasury. This is really to be welcomed, but we feel very strongly that these assumptions should be expanded in future. Because this budget really turns on two things. If we don't get those two things right, this budget is not going to work out. The one is the forecasts. If economic growth does not realize according to this forecast, the debt-to-GDP ratio is on its way to 100% of the GDP. The deficit before borrowing will go over 6% of GDP if we get this forecast wrong. Secondly, if we don't rein in civil service expenditure as suggested in this budget, we are in serious trouble.
Order, members. Order. There will be time for deliberations, please.
As a result of the wrong forecast, we've seen this very rapid blue line growth in government debt as percentage of GDP, which has accelerated since 2008. So the fiscal cliff update. The fiscal cliff is the point where civil service remuneration, social assistance payments and debt service costs will absorb all government revenue. This ratio was 55% in 2007-2008. After this last budget, it is 71.8%. We are in serious trouble. So at the same time, in terms of the civil fiscal cliff analysis, it's necessary to look at state-owned enterprises, where Eskom is the biggest headache. In terms of Eskom, we must stop all bonus payments at Eskom. I call them bogus payments, not bonus payments. There's no justification for any bonus payments in the civil service at any state-owned enterprises. Pass a law tomorrow to outlaw them. Just do it. Reduce employment at Eskom and publish employment numbers at Eskom every Friday on the website. They have to reduce headcount. They are in a declining market. Open Eskom's board meetings to the public and the media. After all, it's a monopoly owned by the government serving the people. Nothing can be secret. So improve transparency at SOEs so that we can understand what's going on. So in terms of the fiscal cliff, I've shown the calculation.
We've got 4 minutes left.
But in short, we're in trouble. At the rate we are going, we're going to run out of money by 2042. And I still plan to be alive by then. Cheers. So please, we need to... Sorry? So
please, I plead with honourable members. Don't interrupt.
So at the rate we are going, this country...
Order, members. This is a live broadcast. The rest of the country is watching us.
Chair, I hope that you will add this time to my presentation, please. Let the members argue in their time, not on my time, please. All I'm saying is, at the rate we are going, this country is going to run out of money at 2042. We cannot continue. We've looked for the first time at the cost of the ministries. We have 35 of them. We are amazed to see that the most expensive ministry is Defence and Military Veterans at an annual cost of 137.7 million rands. This is just the ministry. The minister, the deputy minister, the personal staff, the cars, the VIPs, etc. The cheapest ministry, 4.4 million rands, the National Treasury. We don't understand this at all. We will interrogate this further. Something is very wrong here. How can you have a small business development ministry that spends 26.5 million rands on itself every year and not 1 cent on small business development? I just don't understand. We've worked out that if all ministries can reduce the expenditure to the level of the National Treasury, we can save 1 billion rands from
ministry expenditure, 1 billion rands, by just reining in this expenditure on ministries that really does not contribute other than to the entourage of the minister. This is shocking. These figures have never been put together before. I have to thank the National Treasury for helping me to get these figures. This is where we need to focus. After we've reined this in, we can reduce the number of cabinet ministers. Here we can save 1 billion rands. Then we turn to budget specifics. The wage bill, as we've said, is unsustainable, will be reduced by 23 billion rands. What we must be very careful is that the early retirement of civil servants will put an additional financial burden on the government employees' pension fund. And if that burden is not funded, the fund will be in serious financial trouble. We fully disagree with the Budget Justice Coalition on this point. Those are the members' funds. The government cannot just take the money because the government thinks it's a good idea. It's the members' funds. On the tobacco excise duties, we are very worried, as we know that each time that tobacco excise duties increase, there's less revenue because there's more smuggled cigarettes. So we are very worried about that proposal. We do not think the revenue will realize. A few other budget issues that really the big point, the economic growth projection in our view is too generous, therefore the deficit will be bigger than budgeted. It's a major concern. So the recommendations, the government should respect taxpayers. South Africa cannot increase taxes any further. We've passed the top of the Laffer curve. The National Treasury should be more conservative in economic growth forecasts to regain the public's confidence. The fiscal cliff has deteriorated. We are closer to the cliff than before. Transparency at state-owned enterprises, and specifically Eskom, should be improved. In addition to reducing the number of cabinet ministers, also reduce and standardize the cost of ministries, and a saving of 1 billion rands per annum can be achieved by reducing the expenditure of the existing ministries. And as a last parting thought, Chairperson, why can the legislation not be changed so that we get as public documents the tax returns of the President of the country, the Deputy President of the country, the Cabinet Ministers of the Republic of South Africa, and the Deputy Ministers. That will go a long way towards eradicating corruption, etc. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you to the Fiscal Cliff Study Group, Professor Rousseau, PwC. Are you ready, PwC?
Yeah.
It's this colorful document, Path of Hope. Ten minutes to you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name is Carl Mandy. I'm the tax policy leader at PwC. Just waiting while Helen gets this thing going. I'm going to try and keep this as short as possible. A lot of this will not be unfamiliar to the members of the committee who have been here in previous budgets and so on, so I will try and keep it as short as possible. Introduction, I'm not going to go through. I think you're all very familiar with the state of affairs at the moment and so on, so I'm not going to bore you with all of that. Just in terms of looking at the fiscal framework from an expenditure point of view, there are a couple of things that we do welcome in the budget. The one is the proposed conditional support for Eskom, albeit reluctantly. I don't think any of us are pleased to be in the position that we are in. So we do certainly welcome the proposed unbundling, and we also welcome the cost containment measures there. And it's important that those measures are the conditions to the support being provided to Eskom itself, ultimately, as was indicated in the budget. We also welcome the proposals around the public sector wage bill to manage that. One concern that we do have is that if we bark on early retirements, what will this do insofar as skills erosion is concerned. So we do need to be very cautious that we don't inadvertently see a loss of skills in the public sector as a result of that. We do also believe that more needs to be actively done to reduce wage expenditure in the public sector. And with that in mind, we're disappointed that there were no announcements made in the budget, this year's budget, around the results of the announced review of the configuration, number, and size of national government departments. Hopefully we will see that in the mini-budget in October, but as I said, disappointing that it was not included in this budget, as it could have gone a long way to further reducing expenditure. Just to reiterate perhaps what Professor Yanni Rousseau was saying just now around revenue estimation, we've consistently overestimated revenues in the last 5 years and very significantly in the last 3 years. We're concerned, never mind forecasting around economic growth, but the crux of the matter is it's around credibility of forecasting our tax revenues. So we're concerned that we no longer have credibility in that space and what that might mean from a ratings point of view as well. We're also concerned around the tax buoyancy ratios that have been used in the forecast for the next 3 years ahead. Those buoyancy ratios that have been used have not been achieved in recent years, and certainly have not been achieved in the last 3 years, where we have had buoyancies of less than one in every single one of those years. That said, the buoyancy ratios that are used in the forecast are not at face value unreasonable. They are in line with the long-run averages, but unfortunately we're not in a situation that is comparable when we're looking at that. Just to put this into perspective, if we only achieve a buoyancy ratio of one for the next fiscal year, holding GDP growth and expenditure level and so on, that would actually result in a revenue shortfall of 29 billion rand, and that's 0.5% of GDP. That will push the budget deficit north of 5% of GDP if we end up with a shortfall of that. And you'd note that shortfall is very much in line with shortfalls that we've had in the last 3 years. In fact, it's slightly lower. So we are concerned that we will not see revenues recovering to the extent that Treasury's forecasting them to recover. And you get the sense that Treasury's placing much faith in the ability of SARS to recover its position and actually collect those revenues. And we're concerned that might be a little bit misplaced. So we do think there's significant risk that those forecasts will not be met. Just in terms of the tax structure, again, I'm not going to harp on this too much. Prof. Rousseau did actually deal with this to some extent. We don't welcome the 15 billion rand tax increases. We also suggest that we've passed the top of that Laffer curve. You would note from the graph that shows the consolidated tax revenues as a percentage of GDP over the last 18 to 20 odd years or so, that there has been a significant dip on the right hand side of that graph, and that is essentially the buoyancy ratios that have fallen, despite the very significant tax increases that we've seen. So we don't believe that this increasing tax burden is sustainable, and it ultimately is going to result in reductions in revenues, bearing in mind that our tax burden is now sitting at record, or is projected in the next fiscal year to reach record levels. Okay. Similarly, from a tax mix perspective, when you look at the three main tax instruments,
you've got 3 minutes left.
Thank you, Jay. We've got increasing reliance on the PRT basis against a very narrow tax base. It is one of the most distorted taxes. If you look at that, you'll see again that we are at record levels when it comes to the PRT tax burden. CRT I've spoken about previously. I'm not going to go into all that, but we welcome the fact that there are no changes in that regard. And consumption taxes I've also spoken about previously that we actually relatively have low reliance on consumption taxes. So if we were going to introduce growth-friendly reform from a tax perspective, we'd actually shift that burden away from the direct taxes in the form of PRT and CRT towards more consumption taxes. But that does not necessarily mean that we may our fiscal policy less progressive overall if we deal with progressivity through the spending side of the budget. Okay. It's in our written submission again, and at the risk of being criticized for raising this once again, SACU remains a significant concern to us. It is no longer affordable. It is unsustainable, and seemingly little progress has been made in renegotiating the revenue sharing formula in this agreement. It is something that needs to be addressed on an urgent basis, given the fiscal crisis that we as a country face. Insofar as the tax proposals are concerned, we note that the vast majority of the tax increase of 15 billion rand comes from PRT. Contrary to what is stated in the budget, that will not minimize the negative impact on growth. PRT is one of the most distortive of all the taxes. We also note in some quarters commentators have been suggesting that the fact that tax brackets have not been increased is a good thing. We reiterate that the manner in which the tax increase has been introduced through fiscal drag is no different to an increase in the tax rates. It will place PRT taxpayers under considerable strain, will reduce household savings and consumption, and will potentially further erode levels of tax morality and compliance, which talks back to the point we're talking about around tax buoyancies, etc. It's important to recognize as well that the poor are going to bear the brunt of this. Essentially, the tax increase is spread across all the income groups in a proportionate manner. So something that the committee should actually bear in mind as well. And the last point, Chair, I realize I'm running out of time. Just in terms of the carbon tax, there are two points I want to make here. The one is around the 1 June effective date that was introduced through an amendment that this committee made to that bill. That 1 June date is impractical for a simple reason, and that is that the emissions are actually reported to the Department of Environmental Affairs based on a calendar year basis. So introducing an effective date in the middle of the year will result in a very significant compliance and administrative burden, both for taxpayers as well as government insofar as that's concerned. And then insofar as the carbon tax and fuel is concerned, which is estimated to raise 1.8 billion rand in revenues, this committee will recall that a critical aspect of the carbon tax was that the revenues would be recycled through various programs, including through increased expenditure. We note in this budget, though, that there's no proposals to increase any expenditure to spend that 1.8 billion rand in revenues or to recycle that 1.8 billion rand in revenues. And importantly,
You must wrap up, please.
The minimization of the economic impact was determined based on the fact that those revenues would be recycled. If they're not going to be recycled, the economic impact of the carbon tax is going to be significantly greater than was otherwise the case in terms of the modelling that was put in place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mandy. Treasury will reply on Friday. Stakeholders are welcome to attend the session on Friday. So I'm right, Alan, we start at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock Friday morning. South African Institute of Tax Professionals, Mr. Pete Nell.
Thank you, Chair.
10 minutes to you.
Chair, thank you, members of the committees. We're taking a different approach, looking at some proposals. Keith Engel has mainly assisted in doing this. I want to start with just saying what the Minister said, and we're going to focus on the administrative and SARS side there. Revenue collection continues to be weak, and tax collections, there are concerns about that. And then he highlights the problems with tax administration and the findings of the SARS Commission, and blames that for partly the poor revenue collection. I'll talk a bit about that. improving collections hinges on restoring efficiency at source, and so just to link to what the minister has said, the process has started of appointing a new source commissioner, and the institution has begun implementing operational reforms to improve its performance, and source governance reforms will be considered in amended legislation. Now, side views this year's tax proposals is just a holding pattern, sort of sentiment has been expressed by previous speakers, I'm not going to dwell on that. I mean, it's clear that the lack of the personal income tax inflation increase was to cover for the lost revenue that SARS should have made, and the budget recognizes this. So we share the concerns about the revenue predictions as well. We applaud the efforts of the Acting Commissioner Mark King and the moment of starting to turn SARS around. In particularly, the resurrection of the Lost Business Center is appreciated. I've spoken to Mark, there's concerns that this will not happen overnight. The competency that they've lost there is going to be hard to replace, but at least, as we say, we applaud that, we appreciate that. We are of the view that a good tax administration cannot be dependent on persons. It must be institutionalized. So we support the efforts of appointment of a new commissioner, but as we say, it must be institutionalized. We need a strong commissioner and it will assist in the revenue collection. Talking about improving collections, everyone fully understands that revenue can only be satisfied with proper administration, apart from the growth in the economy, etc. like that, but it's also dependent on that proper administration there. We see a danger is that the pressure on SARS to collect that money could lead to audit aggression, and have a concern that it may be unfair to the innocent, find that compliant taxpayers are over-audited. We suggest that money should be taken from the right sources and not from the most visible or easy sources to pluck the money from. Artificial revenue activation measures concerns us as well, such as the failure to pay out refunds, and I'll talk a bit about that as well. It kills the economy and will worsen tax morality. This is some examples. So the VAT refunds, and I'll talk a bit more about that because the minister specifically referred to that. Paragraph 19, we're putting in provisional tax estimates. SARS queries the estimate to raise additional revenue before the end of the fiscal year, puts an undue administrative burden on taxpayers to meet that and readjust that, and it's a temporary relief for SARS. The 21-day rule, SARS queries and reviews tax returns and asks for supporting documents. And if the taxpayer happens to miss the deadline, they issue an additional assessment raising additional revenue, which leads to a long fight for the taxpayer to reverse that. There's some areas that we suggest that should be targeted for revenue collection. SARS should be aiming National Treasury. At parties contracting with government, we have this, and we've had reference to corruption in South Africa. Corrupt contractors, tenderpreneurs as we've termed them, often don't pay their taxes amongst other evils. And we suggest that the procurement and tax office may have to lay hands in this respect to ensure that these people that contract with government, apart from having a tax clearance certificate when they commence the job, actually finally end up paying the taxes rightfully due by them on their profits that they've made and not claiming deductions that they're not entitled to. What we're really saying is, are their books matching the income that they've done? There is a loss of revenue for SARS when they don't report the income on that. I'll give an example about this just to explain that. Where a recipient receives a bribe, it is generally income because it's in respect of services rendered, so it's gross income. And we suspect that many of the bribes are not reported. In fact, I wouldn't think that any of the bribes are, thanks, Jim, are reported. The entrepreneur paying that, or the tenderpreneur paying the bribe, cannot make a deduction in arriving at taxable income. And if SARS allows that deduction, then of course they pay less tax and government loses that. We find that companies are artificially set up to get government contract but then simply disappear without reporting the income from that and being taxed on that. So our concern is that otherwise legal taxpayers are simply not reporting income correctly or keeping two sets of books, and that's where the loss of revenue is also happening. In terms of illicit flows, the focus should not be limited to tobacco, alcohol. For instance, the sales generating excise taxes, but to high net worth individuals that underreport follows from what we said earlier. This will require forensic audit skills as opposed to financial accounting skills. And this is partly where we applaud the re-establishment of the Lost Business Center as SARS. Tobacco and alcohol is not simply an excise problem. And I think Carl Mann has alluded to that as well in previous speakers as well. It appears that there are many businesses simply operating outside the tax base, specifically in this area, and that's where the loss of revenue is, and increases in the taxes lead to more of that. Cross-border remains a concern, but we need to target those parties outside the traditional order systems of SARS. It appears that SARS keeps going back to the most visible companies, mainly the listed companies, who are mainly compliant. They have put effort in becoming compliant. And there's a concern that maybe unlisted companies simply don't care about BEPS enough and they may be need to be audited by SARS. We also need to go after the cash economy. It's impossible to measure this simply because no records are kept. And for that reason, we don't know how much money can come from these cash businesses. We believe that the turnover tax is not, it's really a failure. It doesn't actually address that. And partly also because it relies on books. We need a different type of presumption taxes. There's enough number of African countries that have gone, more of a medallion tax or a square meter usage tax. Anything other than a requirement to get books. Try and get the cash economy into the tax base. I've said that I'll get back to the VAT refund, VAT collection things. The minister stated that the collections are considerably lower because SARS has accelerated the refunds, the payment of refunds that they've been holding back. And he gives the numbers there, 30 million rand and coming down to 30 billion rand coming down to 22 billion rand. It's certainly the experience of our members and taxpayers that SARS is starting to pay that out. But we have a huge concern that the payment of interest due to the delay is not automatic, and taxpayers have to actually request SARS to pay that interest that they're entitled to. A weak revenue service is a dangerous revenue service. It will target the wrong things to get the revenue, and a good example is a failure to pay the bad VAT refunds. This is not just a South African trend, but we see that in other developing countries as well. We warn that paying legitimate VAT refunds to taxpayers is not we want to emphasize that it's not a privilege, it's a right. You're entitled to that. And failure to pay that legitimate VAT refunds can eat into and certainly cause the death of many of small businesses. Taxpayers, it touches on taxpayer morality as well. If you are unjustly taxed because of SARS reversing some of your deductions or taxing things that you've treated because you didn't respond in the 20-day time limit, then they will simply stop paying taxes. The last I will quickly deal with it. The Minister will introduce legislative amendments to implement the recommendations of the SARS Commission, strengthen the tax administration. We believe that we need a stronger tax ombud, the Office of the Tax Ombud, and that they should have freedom to investigate administrative and operational issues as SARS without ministerial approval. It really is, we find that, I don't want to elaborate on that, but we really strongly believe that that should happen. We also believe that the tax ombud should be part of the parliamentary process when the Tax Administration Act is amended. They are getting the complaints, they know what's going wrong there, and it really is essential that they be involved in the parliamentary process that deals with amendments to the Tax Administration Act. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nell. Saika?
Thank you very much, Chair.
In relation to the reduced time, we will also skip some of the matters and deal with just, Chair, we'll look at, I think just starting off with just one on a technical, which is a policy matter, and it's something that's come up in the last few years quite regularly, which is this whole issue of retrospective amendments. And I think what has concerned members is not necessarily, we've had quite a long debate on retrospectivity in this committee before. It's rather that when we deal with anti-avoidance provisions, that when we have these announcements with retrospective dates to budget date, that we're quite clear, or the Treasury makes it quite clear, what are the transactions they are actually going after and what are the ones that they are not going after. And the concern is that by having a very broad statement made in budget starts delaying a lot of commercial transactions, which is what we saw in 2011 with the Section 45 amendments that led to what was then introduced by National Treasury a few months later, a bucket system and classifying things in various colors, so that those people who have legitimate transactions can actually then proceed actually knowing what those transactions are. Chair, then, looking at the overall view, I think the when we come to Parliament, you've a lot of times said, when we come here, we are here not to come and criticize National Treasury, we're here to inform members. We're also not here to tell the Minister that he's done well when he hasn't, as so many other people have told that we are doing. And I think I concur that the process that we've gone through in this committee seem to have lost the feed, yeah. Has been quite welcome. I have a battery low indication here. Okay, Chair, on that basis, when we look at what the Minister is saying, I think he acknowledges, and rightfully so, that there's a lot of things that we need to fix. They will take long, and we probably need to do them together, and we'll talk about that. But the first problem is, and the question broadly, well, have we actually done something differently in this budget? And I think outrightly the answer is no, I think. And that in itself is a problem. If we're all here, if I look at what we've submitted in the last 5 years, what a lot of the other people have submitted, what the Minister has been saying compared to the last four ministers, we're pretty much saying the same things over and over again, and we're all acknowledging exactly the same problems. So there's no discourse between what's wrong. I think where we're not agreeing and collaborating is how do we actually fix this for the benefit of us all. So when we just look at the overall trends that are happening, if we look at foreign direct investment, we're looking at the currency, the amount of people who work for own accounts, and even GDP growth. We've done some analysis over the last few years, and you can see we've drawn the lines, and they quite indicate that we're all going the wrong way. What has been quite welcomed is the interventions made by the President in last year, and you can actually see in both FDI and the currency, and even in GDP growth, that we had a quick uptake. And what now depends on is whether we actually start implementing the things long term, so that those upticks aren't, as they call, dead cat bouncing. And that they actually become permanent upward cycles. However, I think we have to acknowledge that whatever the Minister has to do, this is not an easy or difficult decision, or good or bad. A lot of these decisions have a negative one way or the other, as we've seen in a lot of these debates, and a lot of these choices are the lesser of two evils. And if we go back more than a decade or so ago, when we started in 1994 to 1996, up until 2007, the ministers in that period had when it came to something like debt, had a specific plan, and their plan was to reduce GDP, debt to GDP, to 10% by 2009. If we can maybe just get Parliamentary Secretary to bring us a power cord chair. It's, the presentation's done.
It disappeared.
Yeah, the battery's flat on this laptop.
Can the staff please assist? But carry on. We can't wait for that. Carry on. Here's a paper from the...
That's the detail. This is the summary. So I'm actually reading off the summary, Chair.
Chair, then when we look going forward, unfortunately we won't be able to screen what we have. When we look at the reality of our ratings, and the title of the slide was what are we whether we are tempting fate, is that when we looked at our highest rating back in 2009 at Baa2, compared to where we were in back essentially in 1994, and potentially with two, if we do get two downgrades in the next few years, we'll be back to subgrade. If you look at the actual data on this, on the risk of default, I think a lot of criticism is always given to the credit rating agency, but the actual data actually shows you are four times more likely to default on your credit on the differentials of those two ratings. So at our best, we were four times better off or ability to pay our debt than we might be going forward. As to the realities of things like downgrades, there's to a large extent a three-strike rule. The first two strikes we've had in April 2017, the third strike, we're all waiting with very nervousness as to what's going to happen on the 29th of March. And I think the question has to be posed both to National Treasury as to what exactly would be the consequences of such a downgrade. Is it going to be nothing? Is it going to be something more? And whether that consequence will be worse than actually just cutting expenditure in dealing with the concerns that the rating agencies have. So once again, if we look at toughening up or tightening up on estimates, it has been dealt with in previous presentations. We've added some infographics. And if you just look at the infographics back even going to 2014, when we started those mid-term estimates, we started, for example, at 4.2%. By the the last estimates in 2015 on that same year, we were down to 1.4. And the same trend can be seen going right through the last few years back into 2018, where we've essentially on average overestimated in the medium term estimates our growth rate by more than 150% on average. And in 1 year, it was even 480%. So we've already noted from both PwC and Professor Rousseau that this has a big impact on a lot of other things like expenditure and revenue estimates, and we need to start getting those numbers a bit more accurate. Revenue shortfalls, you'll see there's an infographic on that. We've already discussed on that in the last few years since 2015. That gap as to what revenue is has gone down quite considerably on the differences. Chair, lastly, I want to then take this opportunity. This is the last time we get to speak to the specific committee. I want to express our thanks for that. It has been an eventful last 5 years, and I also want to hopefully then take this opportunity to be so bold then to make a proposal as asked by what is a bold proposal for this. And unfortunately we don't have the infographic on. A promise was made in the medium-term budget speech in 2018 as to certain expenditure levels. And when we got to the actual budget speech, for the umpteenth time, that promise was broken. And we've gone over the expenditure limits we had set ourselves, which is a big concern and continues to be a concern for the country. And the question we then was asked by members, well, can people come, whether it's ESCOM, whether it's SARS, whether it's National Treasury, can they habitually come to Parliament, make certain undertakings, and not keep to them? And at the end of the day, we know that since 2009, the honourable members in this House has legislatively given the power to actually not just accept or reject budgets, but to actually amend. And the question we then pose is whether this Parliament should not, in even if it's just a token indication, reject the $18 billion increase proposed for next year in expenditure to make sure that whenever we promise something as being a limit, that we actually keep to that limit. Chair, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tushaka. Honourable members, you've got the four presentations. There's another submission by Priceless that was circulated to us by Alan. Questions to the presenters? I note Honourable Tobias, number one. Number two, Honourable Monakedi. Yes. Thank you, Honourable Tobias.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to start with Mr. Nell. I'm going to start with Mr. Nell when I ask him. Mr. Nell, you made very interesting remarks, and I want to start with the presumption taxes. I'm interested to know how do you arrive at a legal presumption tax? Because presumption taxes assumes that a taxpayer has accumulated enough for it to pay a higher tax, and it needs some form of legal justification for you to arrive at that conclusion. First, you have to measure by checking their books, and in this context, the reason why I'm asking this first question is because you juxtaposed your argument on the role of tender beneficiaries, and you simplified it by using bribes. But let's assume there's a company A with a subsidiary company B that it takes its profits to company B to avert paying taxes. Are you suggesting that in this context, if a company has been established, we need to follow the money it used to any other company, and what legal instruments should we use to be able to come to that determination? And I'm not talking only in relation to the administrative burden for the tax collector to do it, but there's an element of investigation. And I wish Honorable Liz was here when we speak to this, because we're trying to give the audit authority a tool to be able to do investigations, and there are those who say, no, don't do it. And you are suggesting that you should do that, because for you to follow the money, you should be having both forensic and financial auditing systems in place to be able to follow the money. So part of the action that goes with it is to seize information for you to analyze it. Now, I want you to broaden your thinking so that you can understand and give us some samples at what point it be done. Probably should have been done in Mexico or in Italy based on how they are able to cover what they've generated over time and how they are able to, in a very illicit manner, move it around. So, and I hope in this context you understand that the administrative burden that's going to go to SARS, a very small community, is going to actually create an expectation that they need more resources, more capacity and skills, which is going to change its budget. And something that I don't know whether have you applied your mind as to that type of skill in terms of mathematical equations, what's going to be the bill like? The other issue said SARS must collect from the right sources. Presumably, you analyzed how we blocked the whole of VAT refunds and tax refunds that in this context might suggest that you are saying the tax policy moved from those who should naturally not have paid more taxes. Well, in this context, the PIT is going to be up as compared to the CIT. So are you suggesting that personal income tax should not have gone up to plug the hole? And what other mechanisms are you suggesting? I'll come back when the response came to that. Then, well, let me leave the whole thing, Chair, because... No, let me leave the whole thing because I've got... So it's... This is, I think I should not even bother to.
Honorable Mona Keding.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I believe Treasury is here if they could assist in responding on clarifying concerns that have been raised, I think, by Fiscal Cliff and PwC regarding the revenue forecast, economic growth and revenue forecast that have in recent times sort of been off the mark, if they could perhaps assist us in terms of just talking to this particular matter. The second one is the one that Honorable Tandy has in a way touched upon, tax compliant by what someone referred to as tenterpreneurs. I have a feeling that the gentleman is somewhat biased against emerging entrepreneurs because in terms of his presentation, it's like big businesses. There's nothing wrong with them. They are tax compliant and all those things. I just want to check as whether has there been any study done in terms of the conditions that he has just presented here. And on the issue of the review of the government ministries, departments, I thought the president indicated some time back to say that in the new administration after elections, there will be reconfiguration of departments, of ministries. So I'm just surprised when the gentleman earlier on, I'm not sure if it was PwC, raised the issue that nothing has been said or has been done. You know, I thought the president was able to outline the process and at what point this will actually be addressed. Thank you.
It was in the State of the Nation address of the Excellency the President, Honorable Karim.
Quickly, one is, we need to explain to professors. No, I got 2 minutes. No, I'm just using my 2 minutes. Very quickly, firstly, I want to say to Professor Rousseau, as I've done informally, we wrote, as we agreed in our report, to the presidency, to the president, to say, consider his proposals that ministers, deputy ministers, etc., buy South African manufactured cars. We wrote, we gave him a copy of the letter and a copy of the acknowledgement, I'm not sure, just to say that they received it. I subsequently exchanged 4 times over the phone between then and December, and we wrote again in December. Khadija was asked to tell you we did that. I don't know if she did. Then I spoke 2 weeks ago to the parliamentary counselor to the president, Gerard Koenen. It was 10 days ago. I spoke to him again, was it? 2 or 3 days. He says, no, they're attending to the matter, they're attending to the matter. I don't know what more we can do. I think in our report we should express our extreme unhappiness at the failure of the presidency to reply, to also say that basically I spoke to some ministers, 3 of them, they're all empathetic, and the matter has been discussed in some appropriate forum. Secondly, on the review of the cabinet, nobody has a problem. Who is today saying the cabinet should be, or the executive should be as large as it is? The president, no less, as Comrade Monakedi has said. So as far as I know, as you said, yes, you can make submissions to the presidency. As I understand, he said, any citizen can do so. They're doing it anyway. So you've done the work, send it to the presidency. I have to leave, unfortunately, and I want to thank everybody for their cooperation. It's 1:43. Tandy can have my 17 seconds. Sorry.
Honourable members, our ruling was when we started this meeting, how many minutes a member will get to ask questions by co-chair Karim, and we all agreed there was no objections. So we stick to that rule. The rule hasn't changed. To our stakeholders, I'm giving you 3 minutes each to reply. Thank you. As you presented, Fiscal Cliff Study Group.
Thank you, Chairperson. The point about the cabinet, yes, indeed, we all agree about the size of the cabinet, but the point that we made in our presentation is that we don't understand the difference in costs per ministry. In the case of the National Treasury and the Minister of Finance, the ministry's cost is 4.4 million rands per annum. In the case of defense and military veterans, the cost of the ministry is 137.5 million rands. And then with the whole range in between, some of them at 65 million rands, some of them at 26 million rands or wherever. The point we make is, irrespective of the size of the cabinet, something is wrong if the cost of the ministry, and I stress again, just the ministry, deputy minister, personal staff, advisors, security, etc. If the cost of ministries can range from 4.4 million to 137.5 million in the same year, the system is broken, irrespective of the size of the cabinet. Then we said there are 35 ministries, and if each ministry can reduce its cost to the benchmark set by the Minister of Finance at 4.4 million rands over 35 ministries, the saving will come to 1 billion rands. So that is just to reduce the cost per ministry. That's not talking about the size of the cabinet, which you rightly said, the President said, will be addressed. But what we do not understand is how one ministry can cost 137.5 million rands, some can be 65 million rands, 57 million rands, and the Ministry of Finance only 4.4 million rands. Something is clearly broken, and we ask this committee to take this up with the executive. Clear guidelines must be set. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prof. PwC, order. Order. PwC.
Thank you, Chair. I think the only point we've got to respond to is on the question around the reconfiguration of the departments. And yes, absolutely, it's acknowledged that the announcement was made that it will be done under the new administration past the elections and so on. So what we were simply doing was just expressing our disappointment that it hasn't been given the urgency that we believe it should have been given in the sense of doing it earlier than that. That's all that we were saying. Thank you, Chair.
You done? Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. There's a number of questions, and with the 3 minutes space, I may not get to all of that. Let's start with the presumptive taxes. The problem of the cash economy is that they don't keep records. And we believe that the presumptive tax or the turnover tax fail for that because it forces people to keep records. So the other taxes, and there's certainly a number, and there are many studies that have been done. I know Sharon looked at some of those as well in the past, Sharon. What we believe may work is like the medallion tax or a space tax. So some of the African companies introduce something where you come and you pay a tax based on some amount. They give you a medallion, you've paid, now you can continue your business, or it works on your floor space that you use and things like that. So it's just another measure that's not related to the income that you make. So that is just a suggestion. Transfer of profits to companies, so my example was that, just to illustrate that we believe that there are people that are unjustifiably or illegally reducing their profits to arrive at taxable incomes. And the complex structures and setting up and flowing the money through many companies certainly is in the entrepreneur space where the government work is done. Our suggestion is that, and maybe that would require following the money, our suggestion is to start with the contract and to then say, but the money has now got left our budget, government's budget, gone to an entrepreneur that's doing the work that must make a profit, and to see that that profit is duly accounted for in being taxed. If that is diluted through to other companies, it will require following through that. And I believe that SARS would really need the skills. In the large business center, they had skills that compete with your business people, be able to properly follow that. We find that SARS issuing assessments because they don't understand, and then they lose on that because they didn't understand the transaction. They were not skilled enough to issue that. On the personal income tax side and collecting from the right sources, I'm certainly not suggesting that income tax on individuals should go up on the personal income tax side. I'm definitely not suggesting that. We are concerned of the refunds. A VAT refund, if I can simply explain that, VAT works on a system that when I buy goods or services, I pay, let's say, 100 rand and I add 15 rand onto that. The person that had made that to me had acquired goods to make that supply to me, and let's say 5 rand, and he's now suffered 7 rand 50. Now, the VAT refund arises where that your inputs exceed your outputs. That money has come from somebody else. it shouldn't be seen as revenue. And SARS is holding the money back to increase collections, the money banked, and that is unfair. Issuing undue assessments to erase it as well. So that definitely is what we suggest should not happen. Compliance of big businesses, it's our experience, and supported from our members, we represent tax practitioners, that it is the bigger businesses, and I sat in a tax court case as an assessor 2 weeks ago, it's the big businesses that are being targeted. It's probably seen that they are willing to be compliant and really want to engage with SARS when there's a dispute about that, but we have an experience that it's the people that are really compliant that are being targeted, and that maybe the other smaller businesses may be seen by SARS as a bit more difficult to get hold of them to get into and do the audits there, and that they're not being targeted. So that's the point we were making there.
Thank you, Mr. Nell. Saika?
Well, I don't think any questions were directed at us.
Thank you to our presenters of the members. We appreciate this engagement.
No, I request that the Treasury make a comment on
We have a session on Friday where Treasury responds to all the inputs made, but if you want to reply now, if you are able to do that,
Thank you, Chair. On Friday we will go into quite a lot of detail because this issue is a perennial issue that's come up, and it's I think we need to clarify again how we put this together and what our thinking is. Maybe just 2 points. The one is that there's a persistent overestimation of growth that has been happening globally, not just within South Africa, and a lot of our forecasts are dependent on the global outlook, and we'll show you some of that information. But the core is that we are very careful to make sure that our estimates are reflective of a wide range of other credible bodies and other forecasters working in South Africa. So there's a more fundamental structural issue there that I think we should probably discuss on Friday. And on the tax numbers, we've brought down the buoyancies consistently over the past few years, particularly on PIT because of what we've seen happening, and more recently on VAT as well. And the high buoyancy next year reflects both base effects due to this VAT refund issue and the $15 billion that we've penciled in for next year. So we will go into all of those details on Friday, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you to the Treasury. Very important session Friday. Those stakeholders who are around Cape Town or nearby, please come and attend. But we will also request that document will be sent to our stakeholders that appeared here today. Honourable members, that's the way forward, and next Tuesday the committees will deliberate on the committee report on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals, and due in plenary Wednesday the 6th of March, 2 o'clock the afternoon. Then the second phase kicks in the division of revenue bill in both houses. That brings us to the end of this meeting's business. Thank you to all. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.